Well, good morning, and welcome to the August 6, 2018 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence your cell phones, any other electronic devices you may have with you today. Today's meeting is both a study and a business session. The study session, which starts this morning at 10 o'clock, and this afternoon, the business session starting at 1 o'clock will be held at the Confluence Technology Center at 285 Technology Center Way. We welcome the public's input at our meetings, and since these meetings are recorded, if you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you come to the microphone, which is located on the adjacent desk. Please state your name, address for the record, and please limit your comments to just 3 minutes. Today we have four commissioners present, Commissioner Boltz having been excused. We are joined by our General Manager, Steve Wright, General Counsel, Eric Walquist, and Clerk of the Board, Rebecca Garfin. We'll start a meeting today with a Pledge of Allegiance and a Safety Minute led by Steve Black.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hello, I'm Steve Black, and I'm out at Rocky Reach. I'm a construction manager for the engineering out there. This month's National Immunization Awareness Month, so it's for those of you who have to get shots. The reasons to get immunized, according to Chelan Douglas Health District, to keep you and your family healthy, including your pets, to keep your community healthy, to protect loved ones from disease, to stop the spread of disease for the most vulnerable populations, especially infants and elderly, and because other parents and experts agree it's the best thing you can do to keep your family healthy. There are some immunizations that are controversial, so you'll want to check with your doctor about those if you're not aware of them. And for more information, you can Google Chelan Douglas Health District.
Great. Thanks, Steve. You know, that's particularly appropriate as both Commissioner Smith and I were talking this morning about both being Rotarians, the immunization against polio, and that Rotary, which has been on a march for many, many years to eradicate polio globally, is very close, about that far away from the final three countries that have incidents of polio, and Rotary will eradicate that. So you're right. Absolutely, and there is some mystique about taking immunizations, and that's been the delay for Rotary, but we're finally getting a handle on it, so very appropriate. Thanks, Steve.
May I just make a comment?
Yes.
So we had a commissioner, Gene Ludwig, who probably a lot of you know. Gene Ludwig had polio and dealt with it really well, but she lived to be, I think she lived to be 96. She was at a meeting of maybe 8 or 9 years ago, and she walked with a little bit of a limp, but she suffered with it her whole life. Yeah. She was a wonderful woman.
Yes.
Yeah. And just a last follow-up, which I'm looking at the audience here. Members of our audience may not be aware that the Rotary International effort to eradicate polio emanated from Wenatchee. Dr. Ed Cadman was president of Rotary International. When Rotary International adopted that effort on an international basis. So it all started right here. So
that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Good comment. Thank you. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you coming. Thank you.
Well, I can add 2 cents to that. So some of you may or may not...
Would you like to come to the microphone?
Some of you may or may not be aware that...
Would you tell us your name, please?
Bryce Greenfield.
And address?
1939 Valley View Boulevard.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. They released a new shingles vaccine about a month ago.
Really?
93% effective.
Oh, wow.
So the old one was nowhere near that.
It was effective. 50.
And generally, it's reserved for people who are 50 years old or immunocompromised, but anyone can get it. So I would strongly recommend that you do, because it's far more effective if you get it before you have some kind of flare-up.
Do you know if you've had the old one, do you know if you then they recommend you get the new up? Upgraded one?
Yeah,
really?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
No question.
Great.
That's good information.
That's very good. Thanks, Bryce. Appreciate you sharing that.
OK.
Okay, so now we're on to approval of the agenda. Commissioners, we've been presented an agenda. Items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear such request? Well, hearing none, then the agenda will stand as is. Steve, I'd like to turn the meeting over to you for introduction of items.
So first up, we're going to do the quarterly district performance plan status update. We have, of course, many items in the district performance plan. We're going to be reporting on a lot of stuff here, so we're going to move through this very quickly. I think the board will recognize most of these items and where we are, but we always welcome questions if you have any. So with that, we're going to get started, and Mike Coleman will be the first presenter.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. We normally don't report on a metric that stayed the same from the previous quarter, but in this instance, I chose to. We did not make our premises passed for the second quarter. We have an achievement of 284. We had planned on 640. That's a result of some delays due to make-ready work in Brender Canyon, and then resource and engineering planning for the Plain FDT zone. And I'm going to tie it down to item F1 under the PPB projects, the fiber expansion. I changed that to yellow. Given where we are with the make-ready work and with the resource issue within the district, we feel that we will probably not make the end-of-year number of 1,059. We're taking some actions to mitigate that and pulling up some infill projects to see how many we can get through this year, but we are expecting it to come up a little bit short at the end of the year.
And the overlap there is really a lot with this National Electric Safety Code work that we're doing that John will be talking about later.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director, Customer Utilities. I have the next one, and this is a completion of the customer satisfaction survey. As you heard from Robinson's research, we had a very successful. This one notes it was 99% from satisfied to very satisfied, so essentially three, fours, and fives. And I think when you looked at just the four and fives, the highly satisfied, it was over 97%.
I've got the next one, and that's the strategy partners work. So we did complete the annual review of how we're doing on our strategic plan and presented at a strategy partners meeting. In addition, we're on track with respect to completing the work to establish budgets for the 5-year business plan 2019-2023 and the budget for 2019. I'll also mention that we are continuing our work to put ourselves in a position to be able to initiate a review of the strategic plan next year, and we're pretty far along in that work as well. Expect to be sharing information with the board in the third quarter.
Felicity Saber-Hagan, Acting Managing Director for District Services. The three that I'm reporting on right now are the Public Power Benefit Program. The board did select funding level for 2019 as well as initial projects for 2019.
And this is Lorna Klemanski, Managing Director of Human Resources and Safety, and I'm reporting on F2A, and we have participated in Pizza Pop and Power Tools for 8th grade girls this year.
And I should have mentioned in the beginning, of course, we only report on things that have changed from last quarter, so we're skipping over a lot of items here.
So for F5, the Parks Day Use Passes, we have surpassed our goal of 1,700 and are currently at 2,500 day use passes that have been issued for the year.
Is that bigger than previous years?
It is much larger, yes. 1,700 was set based on the prior year participation.
Great.
I also have the next couple ones, G1 and G2. I'm looking at the wrong number. Pardon me, I don't have the next one.
So, John, again, I'm down there on J2, just to identify that through our efforts and working with the county and municipalities, we have a pretty robust model and effort to continue to do joint planning with a focus on utility infrastructure and needs going into the future.
That's great. I'm really pleased to hear that. Good.
And I-1, the route design that is being done for the Chelan Gorge Trail, we didn't complete the permitting process. The design is still underway, and once that is complete, we will be able to continue with permitting.
So, Felicity, any particular reason it was held up? Just the permitting, primarily?
Just the design. They reselected a route and wanted to make sure it was appropriate. So, okay. We're just working on the routing of it. Right.
Okay.
Now.
Thanks.
You may recall we did a presentation for the board, and they were going to go one place. That didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Someplace else that didn't put slow things down.
Thank you, Steve. The Arondo Park, this is number K1. We are waiting to get some information back from the Port of Douglas County in order to get more information to allow a decision from the board. And that is a red one, too, because we did have a defined date of Q2, and we will have missed that timeline.
So, again, that's after our discussion with the board about where we are and that we want to do more work with the Douglas County Port before proceeding.
Yeah. And L also I have, and that one is for the Confluence Parkway. At this time, the city did not receive the grant funding they were trying to move forward with. They do have NEPA funding, however, and are continuing with the environmental component. When they do have funding, they will open that up and we will be participating at that point in time. But for this year, that task is complete.
So, Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources. We're moving on to objective number 2. The first one up is item F1, the LED streetlights. That contract, we just received the bids and picked the low bidder, but we did not make the Q1. The end of year target date of having those installed will be unaffected by that change.
Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I've got the next several in a row here. Item G on page 4, reinvests in the hydros Rocky Reach. We had bridge cranes fully functional by the second quarter, and they were completed April 25th. Next one, item H3, we had begin B4 disassembly by the second quarter. You'll see on the next three in a row here, B4 is actually hasn't begun yet. We were awaiting stop logs and head gates that were actually delayed by the contractor. And you're going to see we're actually in the midst of a number of discussions with the contractor on B1 through 4 as well as 5 through 8, and you'll be hearing more about those in the future. And then down to item K, Transmission Asset Management Program Development. We had second quarter targets for items K1 and 2. The transmission group, as you know, has been heavily involved in cryptocurrency mapping, identifying zones where we have load available. They actually got this one in under the wire in a draft form to me, and then my review took us into the next quarter. So you'll see this one complete in the next report.
John, again, I have the next one. This is under L1. We had a goal to have a lot of things come together around feeder hardening, strengthening our lines, as well as what Steve had mentioned, the NESC and fiber coordination by the end of Q2. A lot of focus has been put in developing standards and application processes for pole attachments as well as the safety compliance. as well as some resources being pulled into the large load effort. It is a focus. In fact, we've got some really good news. We've struggled for a while to hire a distribution engineer. We finally have a candidate that accepted and will be starting next week. And so that will be a primary focus of this position, is to get back to that goal.
The next one, page 5, item M1 and 2, we completed the asset classes under the asset management program. We've also completed the asset hierarchies, and the asset register is in progress. And in hindsight, that should have been a red rather than a yellow, because we missed the actual date on that. We do expect it to be complete in quarter Q3.
O1, we the District Services Group did select some specific asset classes and strategy development for Q2, and specifically we developed the strategies for our Parks Department. P1, portfolio, renewable portfolio standards, we are engaging in the modeling efforts with PGP. And P2, the licensing hydro reform. The Senate has exchanged some hydropower draft bills, and we're awaiting further details on that at this time.
I have the next one, Q, speaking about advancing the intelligent grid effort. We have three objectives there. Two of them are in caution regarding the developing a meter data management pilot. We are in the middle of installing or implementing our customer information system, which that is a big piece of. There's still some discussion around which approach, which version we will go with. So it's still out there, but it's, again, a bit at risk. Another one is just being really clear on a roadmap as part of the RFP, which is currently underway. And the last one, it's on path, but I just wanted to highlight it that our primary goal is to come back with a request for proposal by the end of November. And that's still on track. And I have the next one. This is item S3. As part of the overall NESC compliance that Steve had mentioned, we had planned to hire a contractor to do a survey of our entire system to document it. The reasons I've mentioned before, with focus on standards and application processes and training of staff, has really kind of put a priority to that, or caused us to miss that, but it is a priority for Q3. We're in the middle of interviewing contractors right now, and we'll move forward over the next couple of months.
We have secured FERC approval for that. This is to secure FERC approval for the Rock Island boundary adjustment associated with the Otabashan property exchange or property purchase that was completed in Q2. And W, implement the long-range facilities plan. We did not conclude the transaction by Q1, but you will be hearing an update later today.
I have the next one, number X, X2. This is in relation to distribution planning, siting, and construction, primarily around substations. We were in a cautionary mode at Q1. We've changed that to on track. You may recall from our last board update on growth and planning, we put a pretty strong emphasis on our approach to identifying substation sites, and that's currently what we're doing. I have the next one as well. Speaking of substations, continue. This is X3. These are yellow when it comes to speaking about the four substations we have ongoing. We have the one in Old Station area, we have the North Shore of Chelan, and we have the one in Leavenworth. We're currently working with Stabilt on another substation in the general North Wenatchee area. That's a lot of good work, but it's really kind of pushed where we thought we would be with the other three substations. This is causing us, with this kind of bow wave of work, to really look at how we historically design and manage substations. So we're kind of shifting our approach. Not unlike some of the things you've heard from the facilities plan, we're looking at a similar approach for substation, an engineering procurement construct method or a design build approach. So those are things we're actively looking into, and part of that is a shift in roles and responsibilities of folks who maybe in the past have been the main designer, will be more of a overseer and administrator of the consultant and the contract in that arena. So pretty active. You'll hear more of that later, probably as we move into business planning and budgets.
John, I have a question. When we have three substations like this under construction, do we, in terms of the equipment, the transformers, the big equipment, knowing that there's a lead time, do we place orders for all three at once, or are they a one-off that doesn't benefit from it?
It's a great question, because I think this year later, you'll see an approach where we're going to ask for, we could ask for 7 to 10 large items with an effort to, again, if we can identify our property issues, acquire a few more as we're working on, as well as get to that point where we can place that order and have it staged out. We think we get better pricing than just doing this one-off, as well as a consistent approach with the equipment itself. So stay tuned. We anticipate bringing that back probably in Q4.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Good morning. Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. We're now on page 8. And item Y6, IT capital spending. We did catch up on our pace in Q2 and went from red to green, but it's just a momentary celebration because we do expect to be back to red by the end of the year, but it's for some good reasons. We have identified a lower cost alternative for one of the capital projects, so we believe we'll complete the year of spending on that one below budget. And then also we have a project that we are rescheduling to next year instead of this year. So the combination of those will put us back below the 80% target by the end of the year.
Moving on to page 9, we're now on objective 3, protect natural resources impacted by operations. The first two that I have are A2 and A3. Both those were completed at the beginning of the year to help support our hatchery production and also our goal of meeting no net impact.
So the next ones are associated with the Columbia River Treaty. They're on page 11H. 2, 3, and 4. So we're really happy with the fact that we've gotten successfully the negotiations for the Columbia River Treaty started. We're concerned with the engagement process, that whether there's going to be a meaningful opportunity to engage and have an impact on the negotiations themselves. So we have a lot more work to do there. And basically what you're seeing with those yellows is the reflection of the fact that the power group will be working together to express its views about how do we get meaningful engagement with the negotiation team.
And the next item, the title of it is actually at the end of page 11, which is the item to effectively manage the Alcoa contract provisions. And at the top of page 12, the 1 and 2 there are both completed, as we completed the community outreach through Q1 and then completed the management of the contract provisions through Q2 with the payment of the deferred charges that you're familiar with. That occurred in June. So both of those are now complete. Moving down to L1 and 2, also during Q2, we completed our audit by our external auditors and received both a clean opinion and no material deficiencies. So both really terrific outcomes, and those are both complete.
So, Kelly, not that you have to get back to me on this if you can't answer it, but when's the last time we even had so much as a management letter from our audits?
A really long time.
Don't jinx us.
Great.
Commissioners, I have the next one. This is under N, Retail Electric Revenue Planning. There's a number of items. The one that we've highlighted as at risk is number C under two, and that's a plan to bring forward by December, a rate plan, a future rate plan. Again, as we've mentioned, the large load effort has really dominated a lot of resources who would be focused on doing that. So that's why it's yellow. Under the metrics and targets, I have the next one. This would be 5F, the water operations and maintenance cost per 1,000 gallons. We're off by one penny, so it's 723 as opposed to 722, so that's why that's yellow. And on the wastewater one above, that actually has then gone from yellow to green. It's based on a cost per equivalent residential unit. It's now at $915 under the target.
And also on page 14, the next item, H1, right in the middle of the page, are conducting an enterprise-wide business continuity mock test. The plan was to do a large headquarters building test. However, we did postpone that large test to 2019 due to our resource constraints and the dedication to the other large load focus. And it is a yellow, even though we postponed it, because this is a stretch goal. So this is one of those that when it's a stretch goal, if it's not made, it's still a yellow instead of a red. Moving to page 15, near the bottom, advancing our data analytics and business intelligence capabilities is a focus for us this year. And we did have the stretch goal of filling the three open positions that are related to this. And so you'll see that some of our progress here is just at a slower pace. And most of it is yellow because these are stretch goals. But we do have all three almost in place. So we expect to be advancing on this in the next quarters. And we did complete I2 with existing staff of some internal documentation on our data architecture. And then our two pilot projects that are 6 and 7 that you see as red. We didn't meet the target there with the existing staff that we have, but we are making good progress. And so while red, it's still, I think, really, really good progress for the resources that we have on hand.
And you have successfully hired person to fill that role?
We've hired one to fill the manager role, and we're very close to the data analyst also. So, and then we had also had a one other position supporting the data analytics as a backfill. So two of the three in place, one we are nearing an offer.
The next item is for me. This is Lorna. It's on page 16 at the top third of the page. And that's to ensure the smooth implementation of the collective bargaining agreement that was negotiated in the first quarter. And we have that posted online and are working with supervisors to ensure a smooth implementation.
Right below that on L, this is to implement a new bid workflow system to support our purchasing and contract process. Currently, we're in the process of evaluating a use of technology that wasn't considered at the onset that requires compatibility with a new office suite. So we're evaluating how that might move forward. So this is in cautionary status, as it may not be complete on time, but it might be a better outcome as well.
So I have under 504, we did implement the water wastewater rate increases on April 1st. This is the fourth year of the five-year plan.
I have the next item, which is P, execute the district telecommunication systems improvement plans. And I'm going to talk about this holistically. It covers item 1, 2, and 3, and I'm going to start with item 2, the microwave system replacement capital project. That created a little bit of a domino effect. During our factory acceptance, we discovered some design issues that were not to our standards, so that caused us a time delay, and that therefore delayed the land mobile radio and the system disaster recovery feasibility because they both came after the microwave. The good news there is we do not expect the overall schedule to be impacted. We will stay in either yellow or red for a while. They are installing the microwave equipment as we speak over the next couple of months. Depending upon the onset of the bad weather and the high places, that will determine how we come out at the end of the year, but we're pretty optimistic about it right now.
So looking at our strengthening our cybersecurity program in operations, fiber, and business systems, all three, when you look at S1 and T1, as well as R1, we completed our work with the national laboratories to do some cyber governance assessments, and the work in all three areas was completed in Q1 and marked complete in Q2. And then also on our cybersecurity T3, we had the goal to conduct a vulnerability assessment or a penetration test by Q2, and we missed the Q2 target, so you see red, but we did complete the testing in July and are awaiting the final report, although initial results were positive.
And on the bottom of page 17 and then lapping over onto the top of page 18 is the Human Performance Culture of Excellence Program. And the item U1 is red because we did not, in fact, get the training done in Q2, but that is scheduled for August 20th. And that's with the board. And then the fiber and customer utility supervisors were trained in Q2.
For implementing our mobile computing strategy, which is in the middle of page 18, V1A and B, we are progressing on our program, but moving at a slower pace due to resource constraints. So what we wanted to have complete by the end of Q2 is progressing, but not yet complete. So you see a red there. And then on moving forward as a part of that program on the ability to have content and interaction on your mobile device. That was a stretch goal to have that in place, and we are recognizing that we're moving slower on that one also. But some of the positions that were causing the resource constraints have been filled. And so we do expect to continue making progress, just at a slower pace.
All right, it's back to me. On the top of page 19, the item to support managers' performance goals for succession planning efforts. We have determined the support that was needed, and we haven't really been requested to provide any support. So we've determined that our plan is done there. And then turning to page 20, to on item D4, which was to submit a written plan based on volunteers identified by business units for a new leadership academy. We do have a plan developed for that. And now turning to page 21, you will notice a 2 and 3 have turned from red to green. You know, our safety incident statistics have improved, but the fatality we had in June overshadows any progress that we felt there, and it compels us to continue to do more in whatever we can.
Lorna, could you explain, I don't understand, from red to green, the data numbers are the same,
Those are the target
those
numbers.
Are the targets.
If you look over in blue in the left-hand column, so the lost time injury and incident rate is at 0.29. So that is better than 0.48 in this case. And days away restricted and transferred is 1.0, so just below the 1.05. Thanks for asking. I believe we're done.
That's it. So maybe if I could summarize real quickly, we are probably further behind than we would normally like for a set of objectives in our performance plan. But as we signaled from the beginning of the year, this was expected because of the challenges associated with dealing with new large loads, of which year there are no performance plan items in here because we didn't know we were going to have that challenge this year. So we do feel like we've made really good progress on that, as we've discussed in the previous board meetings, and we'll be talking about it at the moratorium hearing today. I think we're getting pretty close to being able to identify policies and rates that address the cryptocurrency issue. So we've had to shift to address that. Yet at the same time, we've managed to make some pretty good progress on a number of issues here, as you can see with the completions in the last quarter. Any questions that you might have? Okay. Ready for the next agenda item? Quarterly financial review. I want to invite Mark Mullins and Craig Coons to come up.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mark Mullins, Director, Enterprise Risk Management, and along with me today is
Craig Coons, Manager of Strategic Financial Planning.
So today we'll be presenting the Q2 financial results through June 30th, 2018. So this presentation does support a number of resolutions that require quarterly reporting to the board, compliance with our long-range financial policies, business line financial policies, and also our investment policy, but also as well as the balanced scorecard objective of maintaining strong financial stewardship. So we'll go through the material relatively quickly today. I think you'll find the results are consistent and better than budget. We do have a lot of material to cover this morning and also this afternoon, so we want to stay on schedule. We will cover the financial highlights. Of course, this is subject to a financial audit at the end of the year. We'll look at our second quarter results. We'll look at our five-year look ahead and take a peek into the forecast window. And we'll leave you with some key messages and takeaways. This is an update only, no action required. The details are in the appendix, which you'll find to be pretty extensive if you're interested in looking there. We will not cover those today. So the bottom line results are better than budget. Through Q2, our bottom line results is $46.5 million. This is $10 million better than budget. Our forecast at the end of the year at this time, based on current assumptions, is $83.9 million or $12 million better than budget. Our financial metrics are meeting our targets at the district level. Based on these results, we do recommend that we stay the course with our strategic goals. We reinvest in our assets and people, and we continue to reduce debt and continue to implement the public power benefit program. So looking at the financial statements in particular, we'll start with the revenue. Operating revenue is better than budget by $900,000. Service revenue, the usage is at about 104% over budget. This is attributable in part to some colder temperatures in February and March. The net wholesale revenue is better than budget by $1.5 million. This is in due to generation production being at 107% over budget. And we've also sold a incremental 3% slice after the budget, so we're realizing some incremental revenue there. But the increased generation does allow us to sell more surplus into the market. The hydro long-term contract revenue is below budget by $3.7 million at this time. Primary driver for the year-to-date number is the hydro costs are at 88% of spend. Going forward, we are expected to be better than budget for two reasons. We're going to catch up on our expenditures to some extent. But we're also recognizing a $3 million item over the course of the next 6 months associated with the Alcoa deferred capacity reservation charge payment. We'll recognize that $3 million this year. Going forward, we'll recognize roughly $6 million going forward each year through the expiration of the contract. Other operating revenue is better than budget by $1.4 million. We have a half a million dollar benefit associated with FEMA recovery on the rebuild of Slide Ridge. We also are receiving some admin charges from Alcoa as we sell their surplus on their behalf during their curtailed state. Total revenues forecast are expected to be better than budget at the end of the year by $6 million. On the expense side, year to date, we're running behind by $8.6 million. The primary driver of this is hydro O&M is about 80% of spend, driven, as you heard earlier by Kirk, the C9 delay in some of that work due to the bridge crane repair delay. Non-operating net expenses are better than budget by $1.4 million due to higher customer contributions from construction and then higher interest due to higher cash balances. Total net expenses forecasted to be below budget for the end of the year is at $6.3 million. So bottom line, revenues are slightly up year to date and lower expenses are resulting a better bottom line versus budget by $10 million. Again, we're forecasted to be at $83.9 million at the end of the year or $12 million better than budget. And this is an improvement of $6 million over Q1. On the balance sheet side, looking at capital, so we're lagging behind there for some of the reasons you heard earlier, $15.9 million expenditures, a little bit behind pace. Some of this is due to substation timing and the work, but also with Powerhouse 1 at Rock Island, some of the work getting deferred with the delays on B6. So we're expected to be at about 91% of the 2018 budget at the end of the year. And as Kirk mentioned earlier, we are going to be looking at the Rock Island modernization timeline based on current state and figure out our best schedule going forward. So there may be some moving parts in the forecast going forward. Our total capital forecast through the end of the year is $127.9 or $12 million better than budget. On the cash side, you've heard we have a positive bottom line, lower capital spending, and the Alcoa shutdown settlement payment has increased cash and investments year to date by $60.3 million versus the beginning of the year. At the end of the year, we're forecasted to have $536 million cash. And debt, we're tracking in line with what our budget expectations are, expected to be at $513.5 million at the end of the year, with our planned reductions of $24 million. I'll turn it over to Craig to get into some of the details.
Thank you, Mark. Looking at some of our key metrics that we look at on a quarterly basis, focusing on electric delivery cost per average kilowatt, that is better than budget. And that's primarily driven to, as Mark mentioned earlier, increased hydro generation and the fact that our generation facilities are operating at about 88% year-to-date of their operating costs, which has given us a better-than-expected cost per kWh. And down below, you can see each generating unit, Reach, Rock Island, Chelan, are all below budget year-to-date on their cost per megawatt-hour. Looking at the water cost per 1,000 gallons, as John Stoll mentioned earlier, we are one penny above budget year-to-date. To put that in context, that's about $18,000. And that's primarily driven to some unplanned pump repairs. Looking at wastewater cost per ERU, we're better than budget at 915 versus 1,033. And our operating expenses are about 84% of budget, which is the primary driver for that. And looking at fiber cost per active premise, we're at 395 versus 440 budget. I would note that that's a rolling 12 number right now. And the year-to-date operating expenses are 102% of budget. And that's primarily, being consistent with Mike Coleman's statement, we're doing a little more work on maintenance in lieu of the capital projects year-to-date. It's expected to kind of get back in alignment by the end of the year in regards to fiber. So putting everything in the contest, looking at the 2018 forecast versus 2018 budget, service revenue is forecast to remain slightly ahead of budget due to the cold February and March revenue we got. Net wholesale revenue is forecast to be slightly below budget, but pretty much right in line. Hydro long-term contract revenue is going to be above budget. Again, this is primarily driven to the fact that the operating expenses are forecasted to catch up by the end of the year, and the fact that we'll recognize that $3 million for the Alcoa shutdown settlement payment that Mark mentioned earlier. Other operating revenues are primarily attributed to increased the FEMA recognition and the Alcoa admin fees for selling the surplus power, as Mark mentioned. Operating expenses is expected to catch up to about 98%. Depreciation taxes are in line. And then I would note the non-operating activity, which is a net expense, is forecasted to be a lot better than budget. And that's primarily driven to our increased cash position, which has given us increased interest earnings, and there's higher interest rates forecasted. Looking at our business line bottom line results, our cost-based activity, a couple items here. Our cost-based activity, which is basically our hydros, again, that 150% of budget is attributed to the recognition of the 3 million capacity reservation. Market-based activity is pretty much in line. Retail activity is forecasted to have less of a loss, and that, again, is the service revenue we've accrued for the first and second quarter. And the other activity is driven primarily to interest earnings. Item of note on water, that is driven primarily to higher contributions in aid of construction, which is increasing the overall bottom line. And wastewater is due to less operating costs forecasted there. There's a couple major O&M projects that are deferred to go into 2019 that won't get done in 2018. You'll see that in some of the business line metrics looking at wastewater when we get to that. Looking at capital expenditures, currently lagging about $16 million behind budget year-to-date, but forecasted to get to within $12 million at the end of the year. The one item I would note is Lake Chelan is still forecasted as consistent with Q1 to be above budget, which will require us to come to the board for a budget resolution. It's still a little too early to tell if that's going to actually happen or not. Right now it looks like it's a good possibility that we'll be doing that. And that's attributed to a couple things. One, the dam deformation work that we thought was completed in 2018. There was a little bit of work, still, in 2017, there was still a little bit of work to be done in 2018. And then we have some breaker work that's all going to be completed on time and on schedule. So taking those two into consideration, there may be a need for a budget revision. Looking at our cash flow year to date, I'm just going to highlight a couple items. When we get our bottom line results here today of $47 million plus our depreciation non-cash item, we look at $70 million of estimated funds earned from operation. We spent about $30 million from capital expenditures. Net debt reductions through Q2 were $17 million. I would note in July 1st, we finished all material net planned debt reductions for the year. There's a couple little public trust work fund, but we've pretty much completed our net debt plan for the year. In July. I would note the $62 million of the Alcoa shutdown settlement, which is really what's attributing to our added cash reserves of $61 million, which gives us basically an increase in Q2 of $61 million to $572 at the end of Q2. And I would note that we did pay down accounts payable, this $24 million. $21 million of that is a pay down of accounts payable, which is pretty significant from where we were at 12/31/17. Looking at our cash and investment balance, the one item I would note is the $30 million that was added to the Headquarters Service Center Strategic Fund post Q1 has been put into the account, and now we're at $50 million related to that. So again, looking at 511 at year end to 572 is our balance at end of Q2. Looking at our quarterly financial reporting, all of our metrics are green. We're all meeting our targets. Item I would note is we are forecasted to meet our debt ratio target 1 year in advance. Still early to tell, but we are forecasted to be below 35% at the end of 2018. And all our metrics look very strong. Looking at our quarterly reporting for our business line metrics, water's meeting all of its metrics. Wastewater, again, 2019, this is attributed to the most part for the item I noted earlier. There's a couple major O&M projects that are shifting from 2018 to 2019. And then 2020 and through 2022, it's just not meeting its target, just barely. And again, materiality speaking, that's about $7,000 to $10,000. And we will address that during our business planning process, which we're currently in the midst of. Fiber business line, all the metrics are being made. It looks very strong. Looking at our integrated electric system, again, these are test metrics, and we continue to monitor these. And these have consistently been kind of jumping in and out of compliance or targets. Again, the retail O&M costs do drop below target in 2019, but then get back above target through the remaining year. And the retail rate support right now is forecast to be about $100,000 less than what we, our target of 28.3. We're looking at 28.4. And I would note that depending on changes to the forecast and plans, they can have a slight impact to these metrics. And we continue to monitor these, and we may make some suggested changes as we go forward, as we learn more. One thing I forgot to mention when I went back, I'm going to jump back really quickly on this overall financial policy metrics. One item I want to note is in the current capital forecast, we are operating under the assumption of a status quo headquarters facilities plan. And we're continuing to look at that and the impacts associated with moving, updating that capital forecast and the implications of what that might mean to our capital forecast in regards to liquidity and debt. Because currently we do not have the full-blown headquarters plan in there. And you'll get more information from as we continue to move down that path. Looking at our quarterly investment report, all of our policies and objectives and our compliance objectives are all being met. The big takeaway here is our cash balances has increased from where we were our Q1 forecast, primarily driven to the Alcoa settlement payment. And the interest rate has gone up, and it's improved our forecast for interest earnings in the future. So the key to quarter two key messages are that the mid-year forecasts are better than budget, and long-term policy metrics are all on track, and we recommend staying the course with our strategic goals. And I'll open up for any questions or comments.
Things just got better. So
yeah.
I like those key messages.
Good. Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
So it is, as you can tell, quarterly review. Board meeting. So next up, major project contracts and project provisions update. Dave Nelson will be providing that for us.
Morning, Commissioners. Dave Nelson, business advisor for Generation Transmission. I have three reports to go over as part of the delegated authority. And the first one is the active major capital projects report. I'm only going to highlight items that have either a variance or something changed in the project. First item down, about the 10th item down, is the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 Governor Digital Controls, U1 to U8. And that project is now complete with the completion of U2 this year. That's been a long project we've had going for a number of years to change out those digital controls. The next item down has a red mark on the schedule of finish variance for the powerhouse, Rock Island Powerhouse 2 storage building. This is just a slight change in the schedule for that project that was noted to the board in the first quarter reporting also. The next item down is the North Shore Chelan substation, and that has a schedule variance as well as a budget variance. This was reported to the board in the first quarter also. I would just note the schedule just relates to the overall timing of getting the property, getting the long lead time items and putting that substation into service. The budget variance, we have the project budget of $8.9 million in our forecast, but we've only budgeted of that amount $2.75 million at this point. And the reason we did that is just to allow us to go ahead with final design as well as some long lead time items that might need to be purchased with the project. And until we develop a better budget estimate, we won't request the full project budget to be approved and available to be used. I would note that the project forecast is consistent with our year-end 2017 numbers on that. Next item down, the Bavarian substation, really the same story as the North Shore substation, revised schedule, and the budget is also only a portion of the total expected need is in there right now, but we do have the full amount forecasted. The next item down of note is the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 excitation system for U1 to 8. And that project, similar to the Governor Digital Controls, has been on a parallel path with it. And that's also complete with the completion of U2 this year. That's a project that will be going away. I would note that one is ended up slightly under budget. It says noted over there under the cost variance. We will be a little bit under budget on that project. I would note up above, I'd like to just go back to the Governor Digital Controls. It notes that it's about $2 million under budget. But that project was increased by about $4 million during the project due to some anticipated increased costs after we'd done the first couple of units, as well as identifying that we may need to use contract resources. So we added $4 million to the budget. We ended up not needing all of that. So we had $2 million under that. And then the last item of note on the page is the OMI substation. And again, similar to the Bavarian and the North Shore Chelan, same story with the budget. We've only approved a portion of the budget to get started. We'll be coming back and requesting the full budget once we have a better estimate of costs. So the next page are capital projects with total project budget revisions during the quarter. And would note the first item is the Shasta wastewater upgrade. We added $2.1 million. That was a budget increase approved by the board in May. I would note that the remainder of the items in green are net out to zero. They're adjustments between various budgets to align spending expectations for the year. I would note that the second quarter revisions is really the column we're focused on here. Those are the revisions to the project. So we have the total budget, the second quarter revisions, and then the revised project total. Just below it, system ops video system, small revision to that was discussed with the board, actually. The next, in the purple, we have two subtotals. A public power benefit is a net change of zero. That's just allocating the budget to the various fiber distribution terminals as those budgets are identified. And it nets out to a net change of zero. And then below that, we have some fiber drops, devices, relocates, conduit installations, and those budgets were increased. These are more for our core areas of installations and things based on our estimated expectations for the year.
And the good news there is our fiber team is being successful at increasing the take rate on the system. Mm-hmm. So we're getting more, you got to spend money then to hook people up when they take the service.
Below that, we have in the blue, we have a $80,000 increase to the Lake Chelan breaker project, identified additional scope that we needed to do. That's being done as part of the surge tank outage, and that overall work is progressing right now. And then a couple other small increases for fish video equipment and Skype for Business. So again, the major item in that quarter is really most of the change was due to the Pashas and wastewater change. And that's dollars that won't be spent this year, but for future.
And we'll be talking more about that later this morning.
Okay, and then moving on to the active contracts greater than $1 million. I think we've mentioned three or four times this morning already schedule revisions coming in our Powerhouse 1 projects. And so those items are noted as yellow. Here with some of these Powerhouse 1 units. We'll be updating the schedules and we'll be coming back to the board with more information on that soon. On the second page, the top of the second page, we have a new contract here with Blue Heron Consulting Corporation. It was approved by the board. And the next item down green is additional task. Under a master agreement with TCF Architecture for the facilities, Rock Island facilities, final design costs. The board has approved the overall agreement, and that plan is proceeding as planned. Down below, we have Superior Consulting, a new task under that agreement. It's also been approved by the board. This one was specifically for B9 and 10 oil head bushing temperature data analysis. And the next item down is highlighted in peach, and that's because it was approved under delegated authority at a bid under $3 million. And this is a two-year contract for unit prices for asphalt paving. And it'll be used with various projects over the next 2 years as part of budgeted projects. On the next page, at the bottom of the page, I have a number of items in green highlighted. Those are new agreements underneath our overall agreement with Peer Technical Group. And these are primarily for inspection services and other project-related work. Where you found this an effective way to meet those inspection needs on projects. And this last page does not have any new items on it. That's all that I had for today. If you have any questions. Okay, I know there's a lot of items on there, and feel free to contact me if you have questions. Come up later.
Thank you. Thank you. Next up, we wanted to provide you an update on what's going on down at Rock Island with the facilities design, and we're also getting ready to move forward at the next board meeting with a resolution for moving forward with a contractor as we move forward with an alternative contracting mechanism that we've discussed with the board. So, Dan? Oh, good. Sam and Randy are here, too.
Morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
Randy Cook, TCF Architecture.
Sam Dilley, Project Manager.
So I'll get us started off and then let the experts take over here. The next slide there. We're really trying to hit two major items today, but this is an informational briefing. No action requested today. The intent of this briefing is twofold. One is to really bring you up to speed on what we've been doing on the Rock Island project over the last couple months since we were here last. We'll take you through what we're calling 30% design. You can take a look at the first time, ready for prime time images of what we're contemplating building out there. And then the next part that Sam will cover is the GCCM process, the General Contractor Construction Manager process, which, again, is something new to the district. I think we've heard it alluded to a few times about the alternative contracting processes we're contemplating, and this is the first one. We'll take you through what we've done over the last couple months since we were here for the last update, I think it was actually in March or April, and let you know what the process is going forward, and then preview what the resolution that you're going to see 2 weeks from now will do, and then it's a little bit different process, so we'll let you know what you'll see after that. So that's really the update.
All right. I'm going to walk you through a few things this morning. There's some graphics. You finally get to see what's going on out at Rock Island. The steering committee was assembled for this project as we've gone through so much analysis over the last couple of years, all of the economic analysis for how Rock Island needs to perform. We also assembled a group that could be a sounding board for us for the design, really the aesthetics, the character of the facility. So working through that as well. We've completed, as Dan said, up through what we call 30% design. We're really moving, we're probably closer to 40 or more right now since the concepts that you'll see here today. And really just managing to the budget at this point, and Sam will cover this a little bit later in the presentation as well. We also have the contractor on board, the GCCM contractor on board, which is really great right now. We can begin taking advantage of them in real-time estimating and thinking through the sequencing of how the facility will be built, not just waiting to the end of the project to bid everything out. So you've seen this site plan before. Just give you the quick overview up on the, I don't know if you can see some on the right side over here, we have what we call Upper Chelan. It's, you've been there before. There's a scattering of buildings that go back to the earliest days of Powerhouse 2. C20, we call it, is this orange building, is under construction. The concrete tilt has happened. That's happening with a different team. We help place it. Oops. We help place that building in a master plan, so it was functioning well with the rest of the facilities that we were designing. C22 is the big shop building. C21 is a crew building. This is where the locker rooms are. It's really where you begin and end your day. And then the rest of the existing buildings, which you can see around here, will remain at least for this foreseeable future. Some will be repurposed just for storage. At least C5, the existing crew building, will be turned over to the rehab contractor. So we're really trying to get best use out of everything that's existing up there as well. And the whole site really master planned now into being more of an industrial village, if you will. Everything really pulled together, very efficient in the way that vehicles will move through here. For instance, trucks being able to come in and having a loading dock to actually back up to now, which doesn't exist there. Very good visual access across the site, very good transparency. Down at the deck of the dam, we still have a couple of existing buildings, C13. We'll just get some new skin and be turned over to the rehab contractor. C14 also just being re-roofed and re-sited, maintaining some of the electrical shops down there, but providing some additional storage. And then finally, C19, which is really kind of the main feature building down there, is the new office space for Powerhouse 2, all the engineering staff and conference rooms, and the lower level becoming a gathering room, break room area, which where the foreman and really where all the activity throughout the course of the day for all the mechanics and wiremen and so forth to really gather all in one place. And then finally, over on the Douglas side, keeping all the buildings in place, but doing some minor some minor improvements to those buildings, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and so forth. So if we take a little bird's eye here, looking down from the top on the Chelan side, you see the new big shop building here. Key feature here is for the new gantry crane, the mobile gantry crane that can run through this building. It's where we have blast operations, painting for all the very large elements like head gates, new warehouse on this side, and really a primary feature of this whole project and the economic driver behind it is to get warehousing and tool room functions and shop functions onto this side of the river to support Powerhouse 2, where for decades the operations have had to cross that single lane deck and all the efficiencies that have come with that. The new day, the new era is Powerhouse 2 and really so many other functions on this side, though, will virtually eliminate that cross-deck traffic, and that's really one of the drivers behind the productivity gains that we expect to see at Rock Island. Now, when you think about, let me just give you a phrase here, people work here, if you hear that phrase. We really feel like we're designing the next era of Rock Island. If you go back to the original Powerhouse 1 being Era 1, the expansion of Powerhouse 1 being Era 2, Powerhouse 2 being really Era 3, we really feel like we're kind of in Era 4 right now. We're designing facilities where in the early goings, you could say that the people work here part here was heavily emphasized, and that Powerhouse 1 is a beautiful structure. There's a lot of pride in building that facility, and when you see it from that side of the river, you can really tell there was a lot of pride taking that here matters. After that, it became more about work. The design of the dams became more utilitarian. The buildings were kind of placed wherever somebody thought they needed to be. We need another storage building, well, put it over there. And the work was really the primary driver. The new era is so much about people. And this is really born from your strategic plan as well. And we've really captured those concepts, the ideals behind the best for the most for the longest. The people piece of this is important, but we're still designing for all three. There's still a here to consider. There's still the work that must be considered. And there's obviously the people that must be considered. So when we get into the architecture, there's an identity that we're trying to reach for. We're trying to establish that Rock Island really establishes an identity for this next era. And you'll start to see that be borne out in the materials, the massing, color. We've adopted a very simple palette of basically a white and a black. And you'll see this repeated as these buildings are designed to be very specific to their use and their function. You can see C22 here being a very tall building for where the gantry crane goes through, but lower levels for lower massing for warehousing and tool room. C20 is a big building. That's a big new storage building and very much compatible with C22. But we're reaching for an aesthetic now that starts to create an identity at Rock Island, and it starts to be born from these images now. So now you're looking at the front. As you come around, you see the gantry crane that can pass through this building, bringing large things like head gates and so forth, setting them down in the first shop where there can be work done on the head gate, moved into a blast operation where all of the existing paint can be taken off, all of that being climate controlled and pollution controlled, and then moved into a painting operation and eventually out. All of those functions are happening in this high space in the middle where we have fabrication and machine shops, which don't exist really on the Chelan side right now, being designed specifically for the new era of operations. And on the left side, having warehousing and tool room functions that are compatible now and associated with all of the fabrication shops so that the crews have a one-stop place to go. All of Powerhouse 2 materials and tools can be located in one place. We also have just some simple canopy covering for vehicles, which Things are pretty brutal out there, whether it's winter or summer, so we have some additional canopy covering now for vehicles. Just a little closer shot looking in than at C-22. Introducing a little bit of color along the way, too. We've kind of played with some greens. We kind of have arrived at an orange color here that you'll start to see show up around the site, and that just provides also a little extra emphasis on certain elements, whether they're columns or doors and so forth, and starts to create some continuity across the site. C-21 is our crew building, so again, mostly locker room facilities. There's a small break room in here, both men's and women's lockers, a small workout room, which exists in an older building down at the deck of the dam now that will be in here. This is really where you begin and end your day. So whether you're a wireman, a mechanic, whether you're plant or CM, utilities, tech, this is really the hub building for the beginning of the day and the end of the day. Showers are here. And this is just looking around the site. There's not a lot of green up at Rock Island, maybe off in the hills in the spring. Looking at the possibility of maybe introducing just a little bit of green up to this building where it might be uplifting when the rest of the facility is pretty rugged and pretty rocky, but very much a low maintenance and very very targeted amount of landscaping here. But you can see the transparency, and you can start to get a feel for the identity of the massing, the colors, the signage, and so forth. And then down to the deck level, what we call C-19, really the main office building and the break room building, so the upper floor, having office space for the engineering staff, inspectors, managers or supervisors, conference space, resource space for maps and drawings, all of that associated with Powerhouse 2. And on the lower level, then, a very large gathering space where we can have 100, 120 people in a large gathering of any kind. There can be training in this space. And then having that connection with the river, that connection with the dam, where you can look through the windows, you can step out onto a deck area. It becomes the one thing that Rock Island lacks right now more than anything is a cohesive place where everybody can gather and where you can have those training sessions and you can have various types of gatherings. There's also a very large kitchen that goes with this. And on the upper floor, open office space concept, looking out at the spillways and across the river, again, a cohesive place where the Powerhouse 2 teams can continue with their work.
So while Randy's been working on design of the buildings, we've also been working on the procurement of the buildings. Key benefits for GCCM process. The General Contractor Construction Manager is what GCCM stands for. Different than design, bid, build, it's a qualifications-based process where we actually go out, interview, select the contractors on their capabilities, negotiate with them. So other benefits, early involvement in design. We are, as we bring in the GCCM, we'll be able to use them in the design process from 40% moving on towards 100%. Collaboration with the design team and the contractor and the district. The contractor warrants the design at the guaranteed maximum price. This is something that's pretty important. As we move forward through the process, later on in the process, we're going to be negotiating for those buildings that Randy's been designing. We're going to be working to get to a final price and lock in that price with the contractor. Iterative cost control process. In other words, throughout the design, from now forward, once we bring in a GC, we'll be reviewing those costs, reviewing the designs, iterating it to make sure that we stay within budget so we can control the costs and not get out of not open bids on bid day and say, wow, we missed that number. We're working towards managing to that number at all times. All work is subject to competitive pricing. Throughout the process, we will be negotiating with the contractor for that price, but at the end of the process, the contractor still has to bid every portion of the project. We still go out to bid and get competitive pricing. One of the other things I want to touch on is, this was really important in March when we talked about doing this process with the board, is that we maintain that off-ramp. In January, February next year, maybe even March next year, we'll be coming back to you with that guaranteed maximum price. If we cannot negotiate a good price with the GC, there's the offer to go out to bid, take it back out to bid through the conventional processes that the state offers. So the procurement team progress over the last 6 months, while we've been designing up to 30-40%, we put out an RFP for general contractors, interviewed contractors, requested final proposals, selected, and then we've selected, a contractor, and we're preparing to move forward with the GMP process and negotiations. What it looks like on a timeline, approximately every month we hit a milestone. So we were here February 20th talking with the board and going to the application for the Portfolio Review Committee at the state. We put the PRC presentation together in March. In April, we went out for the request for proposals. We received four proposals. In May, we interviewed three of the four proposers we felt worthy of interviewing. From there, we narrowed it down to two proposals that we wanted to get final proposals from and sent that out. In June, we gave them the proposals, and in July, they returned those proposals to us. From that, we've selected LIDIG Construction, and we held our initial kickoff meeting with them, which is actually a statutory requirement. So what's next? We're here today as an informational only. On the next board meeting, we're only looking at a small nominal cost contract, $200,000 to do pre-construction services. That doesn't seem like a lot of work. It is a lot of work. This is where the devil is, the details. We'll be working with the contractor, working on that design, iterating to make sure that we're going to have a project that we can deliver on budget. This is the contract. So, you know, that's double-sided. It's a good-sized contract that we're going to be working to negotiate and enter into with LIDIG by August 20th. It only represents a very small amount of the spending for this project, but it sets the platform for going forward with both Rock Island and Rocky Reach. This is the document that we'll be using to work with the contractor throughout for the next 3 to 4 years. So it's a key milestone for us. It took us 6 to 8 months to get to this point. And we want to touch on what's next. The board resolution. So again, this represents a small amount of spending. In March, when we come back, if we've successfully negotiated a guaranteed maximum price for Rock Island, we'd be asking for a very small amendment to this. It might be 5 to 10 pages, but you know, it doesn't represent this volume of work, but the volume of work has already been done. And that amendment in next March would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 million. So a fairly significant spending. So the purpose of the August 20th resolution, as I hit on, contract for GCCM pre-construction services, a nominal amount, will allow us to provide design coordination with the GC. We'll also be bringing in subcontractors to the general contractor, an electrical contractor, and a mechanical contractor. So this entering into this contract through resolution on the 20th allows us to bring in subcontractors to the team and really put our team together. Again, we're going to be managing to the budget throughout the process, and we'll be doing early procurement bids. Those portions of the project that we understand, we'll be getting those out to bid and locking in those pricings or the ability to use that pricing when we negotiate the guaranteed maximum price. And we'll be negotiating the GMP. We haven't talked a lot about numbers. We wanted to give you a brief "this is where we're at" type slide. So construction costs, the storage building, which you saw a little bit, it's out to construction. We're nearing completion, probably be mid-October when we're complete with that building. We're on budget. We've done very well. We've had very few change orders. We've had some deduct change orders. We've had a couple add change orders, but we're staying right on budget. So I foresee that one coming in right where we thought it would be. We just bid the site utilities project, received good bids. We've issued the notice of award, and probably tomorrow we'll issue the notice to proceed on the site construction. Those are the water, sewer, electric-type utilities, underground utilities. So we're on budget there. We're forecasting the GCCM contract to be, as we mentioned in the previous slide, right around $25 million. And then we have design engineering. I'm under contract in most of that design engineering department there. And so I know those prices. Most of those are locked in prices at this point. And then construction management. As we move forward, I am working on a little bit of the construction management with the building and the site work. But a lot of that construction management is yet to be committed. So we're right there. What I would say is we're managing to budget. In other words, we pointed out that the GCCM process is we have a budget. We're not going to spend more than that budget. So what can we do and remain within that budget? With that, open it up to questions.
Commissioners, any questions? The construction management, that $4 million, can you go back one on that? Can you just review that process with me? Is that a separate contractor that's sure. overseeing that there, with us?
Yeah, there's a number of things in the construction management process, being a project manager. We want to bring in the design team engineers to make sure that the construction is going as designed. Mm-hmm. So we have a contract with Randy's team. Randy has two civils. I have one civil on board under another contract. Electrical, mechanical engineers, all these engineers, we want to make sure that we're getting the system built the way they designed it. Mm-hmm. So there's that coordination to bring those team members in. We also have, this also allows us to have myself, a construction manager, and an inspector on the job. It also allows LIDIG, the construction manager, the way we negotiate it is we negotiate them to bring in a project manager and a site superintendent and a safety person. The project manager runs the project much like I do, contracting, administration. Their site superintendent is managing multiple subcontractors. So as I mentioned, we go out to bid. They'll be bringing in three, four, five different contractors that are subcontractors. Concrete, you can imagine, concrete, steel erection, roofing, electrical, HVAC systems. So all that is in that construction management process. It's not the actual cost of erecting the building or the laborers that are erecting the building. It's the people that are managing the work to make sure that it gets done correctly. Other questions?
I just want to add one thing. So this next, hopefully this is made clear, this next contract that would come forward at the following board meeting looks like a relatively small one. $200,000. It's really not. This is a really significant step that's leading us down this path of this using this alternative contracting mechanism, and that's why we wanted to get it in front of you. So you see, we're taking another big step here towards this different kind of approach to how we go about designing and building buildings there. And could one of you speak to, is there a relationship of that resolution to the state process?
Sure. So the state process for our GCCM mandates that you go to the Portfolio Review Committee and make a presentation. We did that process. If Jim Dugan was here, another one of our consultants, he would be doing this. He was very happy with that process. It came off as one of the better ones that he's done, and the PRC accepted our application, and that allows us to move forward. At that point, you don't need to go back to the PRC. They've approved it.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
What we'd like to propose at this point is we've really been, you can tell, trying to move through this agenda aggressively so we could try to conclude as much as possible before moving over to the CTC this afternoon for the hearing. So we'd like to suggest moving to the afternoon business session, starting with the consent agenda and then moving into the resolutions, if that works for you.
Yeah, we bet. We have one more item.
We were going to hold off on that.
Okay.
Just because if we, it's the commissioner travel, if we were going to drop something, that would be the one that, in case we didn't make it through.
Okay.
So.
All right. We'll move commissioner travel to the afternoon.
Or we fit it in later.
Or fit it in later.
Okay. Try that.
Right. Well, I'd start it off by moving approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
Second.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion on the consent agenda, so moved.
You have to ask for a vote.
Vote. We need a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. It passes.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, so agenda 11 is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for Pechaspin Wastewater Treatment Facility improvements and authorizing the procurement of the Pechaspin Wastewater Treatment Facility improvements to be obtained by negotiation. Ask Ron Slabaugh to present here today.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, Commissioners. Ron Slabaugh, Water and Wastewater Manager. As Steve introduced, this project proposes to reject all bids for the Pechaspin treatment facility and procure the project through negotiation. We received bids for the project on July 25th, and all bids exceeded the engineer's estimate by more than 15%. You might recall that David Lodge, engineering project manager for this project, and I came to the board on April 30th. We, at that time, had a complete project design. We were ready to go to bid and a total project budget. One of the items that I recall us discussing is we had some uncertainty and some concern regarding how the current bid climate with the economy being how it is would impact our bids. We had an engineer's estimate for the project of $2.4 million. Plus 10% contingency, add to that previous costs plus anticipated construction administration costs, and the board approved a $4.1 million total project budget. In light of the information that was provided earlier today, you saw a $2.1 million increase to the budget. I just wanted to clarify that wasn't an increase to the total project budget. Up until that time, we had only budgeted for the annual spend for the wastewater improvements project. So that action on actually May 14th was approving the total project budget of $4.1 million, in addition to $2.1. So at this point, we're required to reject all bids. We're, of course, requesting that the board authorize us to speak with the low bidders and move forward and seek out opportunities for cost reductions. We want to see if there's any items where we missed on our estimate, or is it simply bid climate? And also look to see if there's some scope items that we can remove from the project without reducing quality. We would propose to come back to the board on September 4th with a total project budget and a contract with a contractor for approval.
Ron, is this a project that where you could use the general contractor, the GCCM that we just heard about, that possible for this kind of a project?
It would be possible. We would need to go back in time, I believe, to do it. Because at this point we have a compliance deadline of March of 2020, and that's one of the reasons why we need to move on this as quickly as we can, and we feel that this is the best option for us being able to negotiate the best price and meet our compliance deadline.
Commissioner, we also could run into some challenges with some thresholds in order to use some of those alternative procurement methodologies. There are some dollar amount thresholds and some percentage thresholds that this project may not meet. I don't know that off the top of my head. I'd have to go revisit those statutes, but they're not available for all projects.
This is a tough bid environment, real tough. Yeah, I've heard that from a number of county commissioners facing the same problem.
Keenly aware, we saw in our update from Douglas PUD that they did the same thing with a project in Douglas County just last week.
That's right. I read about that one this morning. When we opened bids, there was four bids that we received. It's worth mentioning that all those bids were within less than 6% of each other, low of $3.25 million and a high of $3.4 and change. The two low bids were within $12,000 of each other. So we feel that the project was clear to the contractors. They all knew what they were bidding. There wasn't a whole lot of risk or uncertainty for them. This just represents the market. Two of the contractors made a comment that this seems to be more of a norm these days with these projects coming in higher than what can be awarded. Yeah. One of the local contractors that we spoke with afterwards didn't bid on this project, so the last three contracts that they have submitted bids on have fallen under this same circumstance. And as you mentioned, that Douglas County project just recently. they ran into the same thing. So we're struggling, engineers just across the board are struggling with, you know, how much contingency to add to their estimates to address market conditions.
Any other questions?
Let me say a couple of things. Clearly getting more information is the most beneficial thing at this point. So we feel like we need to move forward with that. And that's what entering in the negotiation process allows you to do, especially with going with two of the bidders. We can go gather some more information about what's going on here. The other thing is there could be implication for budgets and rates associated with that. We're not prepared to address that at this point. We need to better understand where this is going in terms of cost and then come back and talk with you about that. All right.
Thank you, everyone.
I'm going to move to agenda item 12. This is a resolution, amending resolution number 80-6286 to rescind and replace section 9 thereof relating to notice and information to customers of proposed rate action. You may recall that we brought this to the board at the last board meeting, so back to actually bring it forward as an action item. Kathy Melton will be presenting.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kathy Melton, Customer Service Program Analyst. And as Steve mentioned, that this is a resolution amending the rate procedures included in that 1980 resolution. And we did discuss this on July 23rd at a board presentation. And so with our revised procedures, what we will have is a much more flexible procedure moving forward. However, we'll bring a package to you prior to seeking any of that rate action in which you'd be able to provide feedback as far as the number of information meetings that you would like for us to have. We will also provide to you an overview of our planned communications, including media, advanced notices, public notices, and display ads and such. This procedure would then also allow us to make alterations as we go through those proceedings if we needed to incorporate additional meetings to get more information out and engage our customers even further.
You know, I just have to be clear that I think the problem with our existing policies is they're one size fit all. And we have different types of rate actions, some of which really there isn't very much interest in the county in, and some of which there is a great deal of interest. And the basic concept behind this proposal is just to allow the board to establish the amount of outreach activity that we should engage based on the action that we're taking and the board's view as to how much outreach activity is appropriate.
And what it should look like.
And what it should look like.
And I think that's a really important part. I was blown away by one of my kids this last week telling me, he got his news on Facebook. And I said, Facebook? And he said, well, like Washington Post on Facebook. So, I mean, you know, it's, you know, he's getting the newspaper. Yeah, so.
Times are changing. For sure. This will also then include all of our retail rates. Previously, the 1980 resolution only spoke to our electric rates. And so now we're having an opportunity to include these procedures for water and wastewater as well. Any questions?
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
We're ready for put on the agenda on the resolutions.
Okay.
Would move approval of resolutions 11 and 12.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? There is no discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The ayes have it.
Okay. We'd like to cover a couple of manager items. First up, we have reached the tentative agreement on the term sheet for the purchase of land and sale of facilities to the port, and we'd just like to give you an update on what our schedule is for trying to move that forward. So Dan Frazier is going to come up. Do that for us. And it's important to understand this also leads to the window of opportunity for public comment as well.
Good morning again. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. I just want to give you an update on the progress and the expected progress to see over the next couple months in terms of finalizing the land purchases, building exchanges, and leases. So there are a total of 8 documents to be prepared to meet all the requirements of the term sheet. Those include purchase and sale agreements, lease of other buildings, and access agreements so that we can do our due diligence. And we have, at this point, we have completed one of those agreements. The access agreement was approved August 1st. And so that allows us to get on site and start working on our due diligence. Normally, in a purchase and sale agreement, you would include all those provisions for due diligence. Although, when we're acquiring such a substantial piece of property with in an area we know is sensitive in many ways, whether it's culturally or erosion, other issues down there, we wanted to make sure we had adequate time to do a good geotechnical investigation, seismic investigation, cultural investigation, and environmental investigation. So we asked for early access to the sites, and we were given that last week. So we started that work already, as a matter of fact. The next grouping of documents.
Question, at this point, that you raised an interesting question. Cultural assessment, what's the, is there an expectation that there, that will be a an area where that becomes a large item?
It can be.
Next to the river.
Flat next to the river, yes. But it's been used for multiple things, including agricultural use. So there's several things that could have taken place over the years. So they did the first walking survey actually last week, and that's the first step into looking at things that make you say, I think we need further investigation. And I haven't seen any results, and that is actually on Thursday or Friday of last week. So, but we know that those things can take time, and we wanted to be able to get to the point of, yes, there may be some cultural resources, but they won't inhibit us from making an improvement, or they would. And so we need that question answered very early. Now, whether there are cultural resources that may require some mitigation, that's actually, if we think that's the case, then we can move forward knowing that there's probably some mitigation to occur, but that it wouldn't be really stop the deal in any way. So that's what we're trying to get to that answer initially. So the first item we have, actually, we're breaking it out. We wanted to bring these to you in a packet, so it's kind of look at the whole picture. But the item we're going to break out because of a timeline issue is the commercial lease for the Industrial Building 5, also known as the Fibro Building or the Jansport Building. So that building would start, our lease on that building would start October 1st, and so we wanted to get in and do our due diligence on the building itself and also to look at how we would use the building and look at any tenant improvements that would need to be made. So we're progressing that agreement along at a quicker pace and expect to bring that for a first look to you either August 20th, the next meeting, or September 4th, and have action either September 4th or September 17th. The other, we're trying to maintain that package for the rest of the items. So there are two purchase and sale agreements. That is one for us to buy the property and one for the port to purchase the CTC units from us. There are two commercial leases, which is the lease back of the space that we're currently occupying, our two condo units, and the lease of the video conference center space. And then there are two purchase options. If you recall, the port has the ability to purchase any of the properties here or at Holly Street as part of that transaction, or additionally, there's a purchase option. Should we not develop the properties out at Old Station, the port has the option to purchase them back from us. So those are basically the other six documents that you would see, and our plan is to get them to you either mid-September or 1st of October for action, either 1st of October or mid-October. And our intent is to be able to close on all of this, have all of our due diligence done by the end of the year. Any questions?
Questions? Thanks, Dan.
All right, thank you.
I think at this time I'd like to open up our meeting for public comment. I know that Russ Bedell is here and would like to make some comments today. Russ? And if you'd speak to the microphone there, please.
You're welcome to sit. Thank you. I understand that I have 3 minutes. And if the commission has additional questions or desires to comment from me, I'd be happy to go beyond. But understand.
Could you state your name and address, please?
Yes, I will. I have provided you with prepared remarks, a statement. If you prefer for me to sit, I will. My name is Russell Spidell. I grew up here. My wife and I moved back here. We went back east for school and work. We came back here in 1982. I'm a member of the Massachusetts, New Hampshire bars, as well as the state of Washington. I've had my office here in Wenatchee for over 30 years. We raised our 4 children here. Unfortunately, all of them don't live here anymore, but we can claim a son in Seattle. I'm here today to encourage you to reconsider what Mr. Fraser has presented to you. Specifically, I'm suggesting that instead of moving, I'll say lock, stock, and barrel, to use my dad's wording, instead of moving lock, stock, and barrel to the business park, which is really what it is, that you remain a part of our community. Now, the Fleet Service is a no-brainer. You know, probably 20 years ago, under a different commission and under different management, we probably should have looked at that. And probably 10 years ago, we probably should have moved our Fleet Service, but here we are. So let's go ahead and move that Fleet Service. But let's keep the management team, your customer service, your other operations, the commission itself, and the public meeting space. Let's keep that here. And why do I say that? I say that because our communities are under threat nationally. Our main streets are in decline. There's an interesting book that was a national bestseller called Bowling Alone. And it talks, the microcosm is the people used to bowl in teams, but now we bowl alone. And the subtitle here is The Collapse and Hope for Revival of American Community. My point, my pitch to you today is to raise, to scrape off the earth all five of these buildings, including the building we're in. Now, this would take time, and to construct a facility that will be state-of-the-art that we expect to thrive, help us thrive for the next 50 years, and what would it would be here. And so you'd stay a part of our community, a part of our main street. And in my statement, I detail the vacant office space that we now have in Wenatchee, and I think the threat of vacant office space to come. There's a quote I have in here from yesterday's New York Times Magazine, although the topic was global warming, but I think the quote is equally applicable. It's on page 3 of my statement. We have not allowed ourselves to comprehend what failure might mean for how we remember the past, for how we think about the future. And I remember the past here in Wenatchee as a vibrant city, and we still are in many ways, but we're under threat. And as I've shared with each of you, Main Street USA, there's a fine line between renewal and decay. And I'm concerned that if you leave us, if you leave our community, that pushes Wenatchee that much closer to decay and that much farther away from renewal. I think my 3 minutes are probably up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Russ. I appreciate
Thank
your
you,
comments.
Gary.
And
could I ask one clarifying question?
Please, this is, Mr. Wright.
So in the statement you said a concern about moving forward with the description of the proposal that Dan Fraser made. So that is for just the purchase of the land. That doesn't require us to make a decision as to what pieces of this complex would move out there. And I would like to clarify whether you were trying to distinguish between the purchase of the land and the moving of Fleet Services out there from the entire complex moving out there. Do I have that right?
So Steve, I think the issue becomes, well, if you don't move lock, stock, and barrel, do you need all that land? Mm-hmm. And if you do, then great.
Okay. So a substantial piece of that property for sure is really built around the Fleet Services.
Yes, I would presume that the Fleet Service requires the major portion of the acreage.
Okay.
And I support that. I think that makes a lot of sense to move that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Commissioners, we'll ensure that Mr. Spadell's full submission is part of the record.
Great. Good. Thank you.
Just a quick reminder for the board that the option they are discussed is one that still is available to the board. Mm-hmm. There was some analysis done of that option originally to take a look at raising the buildings here. I'm not sure if you'd like some information about that, or what's the best way to proceed with that.
Yeah, I for one don't remember. I don't remember it. So I'd just like to look at it again.
Okay.
Rough numbers.
How about if we take that as an action item, we'll gather that information, yeah, pull it together for the board.
Yeah.
One of the things I'd like to interject is that the any change is always going to be a little scary, whether we move, whether we don't move. And I think we're proceeding along this path slowly and carefully and really taking all matters into consideration. But my own personal experience in life is that changes, particularly major changes like we're proposing, always carry a degree of fear as to what the outcome will really truly be. And until we're there, we don't know precisely what that outcome is. We can certainly take measures to prepare and be careful about the steps moving into that outcome. We can design an outcome. But I also am reminded by, you know, some of the comments that to proceed in the same fashion and expect a different outcome is, you know, the definition of insanity. That was a famous author who penned that phrase. And so we have to be careful that we see a change as a negative rather than any possible positive outcome. And indeed, the potential for positive does exist in a move. Now, I want to balance this, and I think it's a topic that needs to be balanced and deserves fair balance as we move forward. It would be terrible and certainly not something that as a commissioner that I would be doing my job if I simply said that there's no outcome but a bad outcome, because I don't believe that. I believe that there could very well be positives to a move and the potential of what this base could become. We've all visited cities where they have dynamic downtowns. There's streets are closed. There's sidewalk cafes. There's suddenly that the city that used to roll up at sidewalks at 5 o'clock now goes till 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock as the restaurants continue to serve patrons and visitors love to come and vacation in those kinds of cities. So we need to go, as I said earlier, slow with a very careful step forward. And at the end of this journey, it may just be that as we continue to consider the options, that staying in this site is the right option. On the other hand, it may be that the city's potential for the future and the use of this site far outweighs the PUD's presence here. So we're being thoughtful. Russ, I want to thank you for your comments. I will read this very carefully, and I will even take a look at the Bowling Alone book because I find that intriguing. But
it was a good read, Russ. I read it when it first came out.
Yeah.
Very good read.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I've got another copy if anybody wants one.
So I think these are all very careful thoughts that we have to proceed carefully, and we need comments like yours, Russ. We need to hear that, and we need to factor that into the process as we move forward and keep an open mind along the path to make sure that we all take the right step and we create a very a vitality in this in the downtown that maybe could exceed what we have today. So thank you very much for your comment.
That's I was going to do actually one other quick manager item, just a fire update. So I've been tracking very closely the Cougar Creek fire, and so far at least haven't seen significant risk to our structures. A lot of work has been done to try and prepare those structures to get as much get them ready for fire if it were to come through that area. And we're going to watch very carefully the next couple of days because it's going to get drier and hotter, and that's the scary conditions for the fire taking off. But so far, not a significant threat to our facilities.
On that note, I'd just like to share one thing with staff and also with other commissioners, and that was a news report on the radio talking about the Department of Natural Resources, which operates, and Bureau of Land Management, which operate a very large wildfire fighting force. On the radio, it indicated that as of the first of this month, last year, or I should say this year, we have over 920 incidents of wildfire. Last year, for the entire year, there were only around 864 for the entire year. So resources are being stretched quite thin.
And the response this year has been like night and day from last year. They've been suppressing fires pretty rapidly.
Yeah. One other comment they made on the radio was that the majority of this year's wildfires have been man-caused, typically along the side of a roadway, which is where our infrastructure is often found. Yeah.
We could, if you want, move through the item that we deferred earlier. Lisa Sanders is here to go through commission mm-hmm. travel.
Hello, I'm Lisa Sanders, admin in finance. To look over your next few months of travel, not much has changed since we last spoke about it. So we have rooms held for Waputa in September, no registrations yet. We now have only Commissioner Congdon traveling to the water workshop.
Re-election.
Commissioner Smith will be attending the budget committee in October.
May I interrupt? Have you canceled Randy's room for the water workshop? Because they are really short on
room. I will do that.
I mean, there are no rooms available.
Yeah, I'll do that today. November, we have rooms held for Waputa. And for the Waputa Annual Conference, it will be at the Tulalip Resort, but I don't know if there's a room block open yet. Is there anything I'm missing? Any changes I need to make?
Look acceptable?
Yep, looks good.
See? That's good.
All right.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yep.
Why don't we move on to commission items? Do we have any items, commissioners? No commission items?
I don't.
I'll jump in here and just give a quick update. I had the opportunity to fill in for Commissioner Smith in Washington, D.C. for policymakers. I will say I had a great experience back there. Ben, the commissioner from Lewis County, and I called upon the west side congressional staff as the west side was short-handed. So even though these were not congressional legislators that would be in our district, I did introduce the concept of hydro to them. Many of them have no hydro in their district. And so they were quite pleased to hear about things such as spill and seals that we have issues with eating our salmon coming up the river, things that typically they're not hearing about. Very receptive, and as a matter of fact, Congressman Kilmer sent me a thank you note for calling some issues to his attention that affect the hydro complexes in the state. So. Great experience. Our message was clearly heard, very supportive, and including topics like pole attachments, which was another hot issue, but we received very favorable responses. So, yeah. Thank you for that opportunity, Randy.
Thank you for doing it. Our utility needs to be back there from the commissioner level on a regular basis. We have a lot of issues that they listen. Our staff's back there quite a bit, but they like hearing from the electeds in this area.
Well, they do, and I will say that the environment is quite different when you go back, and there's in the case of myself and Ben, two of us, so we're sitting in a private chamber with the representative who's all ears and listening versus going back as a large contingent with APPA where we have 30 people in a conference room, and that is somewhat overwhelming. So this is a much more effective way to transmit the message. So that's all we have on Commissioner item.
Okay, so in terms of delegation action items, we have two from the last meeting, neither of which we've completed, and so we will be getting back to you on those. The first is cryptocurrency applications. How would they be processed? I don't expect to actually bring that back to you until we get much further along in defining what the structure for the rate and how that will work. And then the what would it take to prepare a map of PUD-owned properties? We're still looking into that one. So we'll get back.
Steve, may I, Mr. Chairman, ask a question before this afternoon's public hearing, and maybe it'll be presented this afternoon. How many applications have we received, and how many cryptocurrency mining operations do we currently have operating that are under 50 kW?
So we'd have to take a look at that. Of course, we haven't received any applications since we went into the moratorium, so there's no news there.
There were none in process when that...
If they were in process, if they weren't in, they...
Okay.
Moratorium.
Oh, okay.
There may be some caught in the freeze. We froze ones that were...
All right.
Or we can try to find...
Just some of that ballpark number would be helpful.
Yeah, so I'll take that. Lindsay and John are not here right now, so I'll follow up with them.
Sorry, kind of a late ask.
Yeah, I don't think it was something we planned to present. Commissioners being this your listening opportunity, but we can try to find that.
Thank you.
And
delegation items.
Yep, we have two from this and from this meeting. Taking a look at the information with respect to what the analysis that we did previously about facilities, taking this complex and basically raising it, and what would it take to be able to make that work, and what would the cost of that be? So we did do some prior analysis on that. We'll pull that together and bring it back at a future board meeting. And then the request that was just made with respect to crypto applications under 50 kW, we'll see how quickly we can come up with that. Those are the only two. Miss anything?
Okay. I think that was it. So, additional public comment?
So, Commissioners, we will have two motions changing the date or time for training and setting a location, and setting a workshop that we can handle this afternoon after the public hearing or now. There should be motions attached in your packet.
You'll provide?
I think they're attached in your package.
You want to take care of the training one now?
Yeah, let's do
that. I didn't get one. Sorry.
Let me give you mine.
Yeah. Here.
It's up there.
Right here. Oh, thank you.
Anyone else need one? Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move to change the location of the special meeting on August 20, 2018 at 8:30 a.m. to the Commissioner Boardroom in the Headquarters Building, 327 North Wenatchee Avenue, Wenatchee.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The ayes have it.
We could do the second one if you prefer.
Additionally, Mr. Chairman, I move to set a special meeting on October 4th, 2018 at 9 a.m. at the Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee, for the purpose of a board workshop.
Do I hear a second? It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Okay. So I think we're going to close the meeting. There's been no public comment. So the meeting will reconvene 1 o'clock at Confluence Technology Center. That's 285 Technology Center Way in Wenatchee. We're adjourned.
Thank you. Recessed.
Good afternoon and welcome to the August 6, 2018 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District. I'd like to remind everyone, please silence your cell phones or any other electronic devices you may have with you today. I'd also like to welcome all of our visitors today. We place great value on the public input at all of our meetings. And since meetings are recorded, if you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you please come to the microphone, speak clearly, please state your name and your address for the record, but please also be sensitive and cautious with respect to your time. There's many people here today, so please limit your talk for 3 minutes. Today's session is a public hearing on cryptocurrency, and we welcome all of you that are here, and thank you for your input. What I would like to do at this time is turn the meeting over to Steve Wright, our general manager.
Well, I'd like to welcome everyone as well and just say that we're pleased that there is this level of engagement on this issue. First of all, we did listen very carefully at the last public hearing, and we have given a lot of thought to what we heard there. I think we heard a number of folks express concern about the potential impact on existing customers of Chelan PUD of cryptocurrency if it were to take off in any sort of large form. But we also heard some folks say that there's opportunity potentially in cryptocurrency mining that could create some advantage for Chelan County. So what we have attempted to do is what we call trying to turn lemons into lemonade. We've been looking at where we might be able to site cryptocurrency within our service territory that was in the within the existing capability of the transmission and distribution system that's available, and also to look at pricing so that we could figure out whether there's a way to be able to put a pricing regime in place that would assure that the existing Chelan PUD customers would be positive to neutral of any outcome from cryptocurrency mining choosing to locate here. And we feel like we've made a lot of progress in that regard. So what we will be presenting today is nothing new that has not been presented in a previous board meeting. It's really an update on the work that we've been doing. We don't consider it to be complete, although we believe that we have made substantial progress in terms of better understanding how we might be able to create lemonade out of this situation. And we're anxious to hear the reaction of folks who are here today to the work that we have done. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Lindsay Mons, who will be walking us through a presentation.
Lindsay. Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. We're gathered to listen to our public hearing, public comment today. But as Steve mentioned, I will provide some background information on previous board presentations and information that we've provided you, but likely not heard by much of the public here, so giving them an opportunity to hear the message as well. There we go. Following that information, we'll move to public comment and then propose next steps. So to begin with, when we begin any moratorium, we have certain goals and outcomes that we'd like to achieve through the moratorium. And just as a reminder of those goals for today is that we're seeking outcomes that provide service that's neutral to beneficial to our non-cryptocurrency customers. In doing this, we want to have a reasonable assurance that costs are recovered, both in the appropriate amount of time and in the appropriate way. We want to assure that high reliability continues for both existing customers and our new customers as they come online. And that includes cryptocurrency and everyone else. We want to inform all of our new customers of what they can expect going forwards, both in the short term and the long term, so that you can make reasonable business plans as well. And we want to make decisions that support our community plans, and also to minimize impacts on other district work. So both looking at the community and what they're planning for in the district and what we're planning for, making sure that all those efforts continue moving forward. So first, as we move into rate setting and discussions, we have to identify what group of customers that we're looking at. So looking specifically at cryptocurrency, there are specific challenges and costs that come with this group of customers. One big item is the business model mismatch, which we've talked about before. The district plans and does financial planning and everything else over the long term, so recovering costs from customers over the life of assets, things like that. In our experience working with cryptocurrency customers, business plans are on a much shorter time frame, so our need to recover costs over the long term doesn't necessarily match with the business plan of a cryptocurrency customer. So we have risks of not recovering costs for our infrastructure in that way, and also risk of stranded asset if customers were to leave. It has impact on our growth planning models, looking into the future as far as investing in new assets, but also in our energy planning models for purchasing and selling of the energy that we generate. We also have challenges in just how a cryptocurrency operation operates on our system, a system that was built for more of a variable load type use. And cryptocurrency typically using as much power as possible all the time. We see premature aging of our line and transformer assets, and there's reliability and safety risks where those equipment can be overloaded. There's also availability of transmission and distribution systems, the capacity within those systems that has been built for future use. So coming in using up all that capacity, we run into constraints in that area. So in the title of this slide, I mentioned cryptocurrency and similar loads. So similar loads in our thought process would be any sort of cryptocurrency mining, be it Bitcoin mining or any of the other cryptocurrencies that are out there or may come in the future. Other things that we've heard it referred to as script mining or ASIC mining, blockchain and other ledger developments, et cetera. Those are all the types of loads that we see that have these impacts. A little bit more into the details there. I'm sorry, this slide is terrible to read. I hope you can read it in your handout. The colors are pink. We'll keep that in mind for next time. So for these cryptocurrency and similar loads, some of the major characteristics that we see are the high energy use density. So small footprints, high energy use, different from what our system was designed to handle. High load factor loads, which means all on all the time, creates heating and all sorts of different impacts to our system. These loads are requiring abnormal alterations to ensure that the safety and reliability remain high. Units of load that are portable and distributable, so can pick up and move at any time. We may make improvements in one area and then they can move to a new area, so we're kind of chasing with our infrastructure improvements. Volatile load growth and reduction, both as an individual customer and in the aggregate, so bringing on load quickly, dropping load quickly in response potentially to market signals or other things. See what else we have here. High exposure to some volatile commodity or asset prices. So as we've seen, as the price of Bitcoin raises and lowers and grows, we have different requests, different loads, different profiles of customers as those things happen. So things that are outside of our control are impacting our systems. And it's also part of an industry with a potential to become a large concentration of power in our service territory. So when we went into the moratorium, we had about 200 megawatts of requests, which would double our local load. So it's a significant impact both to our systems and the way we operate. So with that in mind, I think it was about a month ago, we proposed a new class definition for consideration. This would be a cryptocurrency and blockchain processing and similar loads. A majority of the words on this slide are the words that we just went through on the list, so I'm not going to read through it, but it sets up a separate class for cryptocurrency, and in doing that allows us to tailor rates, charges, infrastructure, all of those types of things to this customer class. I'll pause there before we move into the infrastructure discussion to see if the board has any questions on the rate side of, or the definition side of things. All right, so moving from a class definition, we start looking at the infrastructure availability. There's been a great deal of work put into this piece of the research for the moratorium, and we found that in our transmission system, we do have pockets of available capacity, but also areas where we have severe constraints. And the timelines and costs associated with locating in those areas reflect that. On the distribution side of things, so this is the typical voltage which customers are normally connected to. There are a few areas with some capacity, but most of the county we would require significant system construction to serve cryptocurrency expansion. And a little more detail on those. So this slide reflects a many weeks of work in our transmission department. They've put in a great effort here in running scenarios and looking at what we would call our Wenatchee corridor. So Old Station area at the north, Monitor kind of at the west, and then down through Wenatchee to Malaga. So within our transmission system, we've identified about 100 megawatts of capacity there, and that's at a transmission voltage. So in order to access that capacity, a customer would have to build a substation in order to transform that voltage down to a usable, typical operation. On the substation side of things, so this is the distribution voltage. So these are areas where those substations have already been built. There are six dots on that slide. They're hard to see. But the size of those dots indicate the relative capacity available in our existing substations. I'd note that no single location has more than 4 megawatts. And that changes daily as we get new customers, new operations come online, new peak loads are met. Just with the heat that we've had recently, we've had new summer peak loads. So as things like that change, the capacity changes. So that's one reason why you don't see specific numbers on this slide, because tomorrow they'd be outdated. But relative capacity-wise, the size of the dots indicate that. That substation capacity does not equate to a single location. So each substation has several feeders that come out of it, and the load is distributed among those feeders, and they go to different locations. So while this analysis was done at the substation level, each location or potential location for service requires an engineering study to identify the exact amount of capacity available at that location. With these connections at a substation level, all regular line extension costs and upfront charges apply. That could include up to reconductoring a line if that particular feeder doesn't have sufficient capacity, and that cost would all be borne by the customer. And then once we get to a point where load requests are in excess of the location availability, customers may be required to construct substation infrastructure or other infrastructure. So to account for the cost of substation capacity, we have in the last HDL effort we established upfront capital charges, and we've revised and refreshed those associated with this effort. So upfront capital charges, we've added a transmission cost in order to free up that 100 megawatts in the Wenatchee corridor. There are some contingencies that have to be taken care of, so that would cost approximately $55 a kW for those first 100 megawatts in that area. Again, that's the Monitor, Old Station, Wenatchee, Malaga area. A majority of that capacity, in order to access it, would require construction of substations. Just a reminder there. Beyond the Wenatchee corridor, another area that we've put significant effort into is looking at what other capacity in the county is available. In the areas north of Leavenworth, so that's beyond the city, we are not going to allow any cryptocurrency connections that would impact the Anderson Canyon Summit line. We've looked at what it might cost to increase capacity on that line, and given the terrain and the property ownership, federal property ownership, access limitations, we don't anticipate the ability to rebuild that line. So at this point, we're limiting connections in that area. In all other areas of the county, we're estimating that it would cost an additional $400 to $500 a kW for the transmission impacts associated with those areas. Those are all new charges compared to the HDL rate that we went through last time through. On the distribution cost side of things, we've updated those charges, and they're in the range of $270 to $388 a kW, depending on the substation capacity available. So if you were to locate on one of those substations that has capacity, it would be in the $270 per kW charge. Other substation areas, it could be up to the $388, and we would have to take a look at each request separately to determine that. Again, where substation capacity is not available, customers may be required to build. And in very light blue on this slide, you see that willingness to pay does not guarantee service availability. So first we would analyze availability and then talk about upfront charges. We're going to move into rate submit next. If the commission has any questions about infrastructure, yes.
Just for clarity, you did say all of the substations that you've identified, there's no more than 4 megawatts available at any one of them?
At any one location.
Correct. At any one location. And you may or may not be the right person to answer. Building a substation takes approximately how long?
Well, for the PUD to build a substation, it used to be in the 3 to 5 year range. We're having more challenges with property siting for substations, and it's taking a little bit longer these days.
Okay, I think that's good information for everybody to have.
All right. So when we talk about new rate classes, we have to talk about new rates. At the last moratorium hearing, we talked a bit about our energy generation sales, let's say, the way we sell our energy out that we generate. We look forward into the future and sell on long-term contracts in order to ensure the best price for our local customers. And because of that, we're sold for the next 5 years in energy, and at that time talked about evaluating market index pricing. So this slide reflects that evaluation of the market index pricing, and that monthly energy price would be subject to market availability. I guess I can't emphasize enough the fact that this rate is variable. So every month the customer will see a different energy rate on their bill. It may be based on a daily energy rate or a monthly energy rate, but it would change every month depending on the market. The graph that you see here, let's see if I can, this is the monthly index variability over the last about 10 years. So you see it going up and down kind of between $10-ish up to $90 a megawatt hour. So that's the units of transaction. When we sell energy or buy energy on the market, we speak in megawatt hours. That equates to about 1 cent to 8 cents per kilowatt hour. Last time we met and talked with the board, we were averaging around down here around, I think it was about 2.5 cents over the last 24 months. on the market. And since that time, in late July and into August, we've had extreme temperatures and we've seen a spike up in these prices. So when we were talking last month about, you know, average prices down here, I think the monthly average for last month was $53. So that's 5 cents a kilowatt hour just in this piece of the rate. And we're looking for August to be up in this orange area here. So it's extreme volatility, but it's volatility that the PUD experiences as well. So as customers come in, increase load, change their load on a daily basis, we experience this variation in our financial situation as we purchase and sell on the market. So staff's recommendation is to pass on that risk and variability to the customers that are causing that impact. So when we look at estimated rates or effective rates, which include all of the elements of our structure, which are basic charge, demand charge, and energy charge, for larger services, so over 1 megawatt, at that market average index price for the last 24 months, when we met with the commission last, it was averaging about 5.5 cents a kWh, and that was through June of 2018. When we look at the forward market, which is the next box over there, kind of light blue colored, for use over a megawatt, looking at the future market energy, it was about 6 cents when we met with the commission last. For the month of July and August, we're estimating that to be up around 10 cents. So that's how the rate would vary in this rate class with that market fluctuation. It could also drop below 6 cents in the times of year when the trough of the market energy pricing is less. So for residential services, when we went through the rate discussion the last time through for HDL, we had no residential high density loads. That's a relatively new thing that we've been experiencing, and it's had a significant impact on our delivery system. and potential impact on the delivery system. So looking through the cost of residential services, the way our residential system was built, we've recommended applying a different charge for residential services based on that cost of service in those areas. And that, at the time we met last, was 7 to 10 cents a kWh. That would also increase with the market. I didn't even attempt to put an estimate in here because as each residence uses power differently, it could vary widely. That would go up as well. Yeah?
Lindsay, a question on residential service. Is it safe to assume that if a residence is discovered to be mining, that all energy use in the home moves to that rate, the rate that you're suggesting here?
That's correct, because our metering can't differentiate between the type of use that's in the home. So our regulations state that we would charge at the highest applicable rate. So this is an area where, as Steve mentioned, we've done work. We haven't done a whole lot of detailed work because this, when you start getting out down into the exact rate design, it takes a lot of staff time. So that's why we wanted to bring it to the commission first before we get too far down in there, in case there was any thoughts or direction, and allow the public to provide feedback before we get too far down that road. So in summary to date, we're continuing our goal of keeping non-cryptocurrency customers neutral to that impact, so the risk of, say, for example, the market volatility. Cryptocurrency and similar operations do have different impacts to the district, and staff's recommending a separate rate schedule as we move forward. We've identified some of that system capacity that's available for cryptocurrency in supporting that growth of technology in the area. But when that capacity is spoken for, costs and timelines will increase significantly. To avoid impact on other local growth, we have included about 5 years of forecasted load in determining what's available so that we're not in a position where we're completely out of capacity for our local growth. And we're recommending considering cryptocurrency rates that reflect the cost of purchasing market energy and increased cost of delivery in those residential areas. So with that, if the commission has any further questions before public comment, I'm happy to take those.
Commissioners, any questions?
I would like to offer two additions to what Lindsay said. For, so within the constraint that we are not willing to take on cost and risk that might flow through to other customers, we are willing to work with cryptocurrency customers in at least two areas. One, in response to Commissioner Smith's question, it may be possible to build a distribution substation quicker than the PUD could build it if someone brought forward land or brought something to the bargain that could actually help things move forward, and we have been willing to do that in other situations and would be willing to do it here. And second, we're also willing to work with cryptocurrency customers to manage their energy use through periods of high spikes where prices might be high. They would have the option of being able to reduce their service and be able to avoid the higher charges. And we've heard that there is the potential for interruptible loads in the cryptocurrency world. And so we've said willing to engage with that because that means that the cost is being avoided as opposed to the cost being passed on to other PUD customers.
Good.
With that.
That reminds me, sorry, one thing that I didn't note, it was on the slide, but I didn't mention as we were talking about that variable price of energy, there are third-party companies that will provide some assurance or transactions to firm up the cost of energy, so they would exchange a variable rate for a fixed rate. So that's also at the option of the customer to look into something like that.
So before I open the meeting to public comment, I just want to make one comment, and that is that today's meeting will not include any kind of a board decision on cryptocurrency rates. We're here to listen. This is a public hearing. We want to hear comments. Remember to keep your comments just to 3 minutes. Be courteous. Let others have an opportunity at the microphone. So with that, I'd like to open it up to public comment.
Hi there. My name is Thomas O'Connell. I live out at 12049 Brett's Drive out in Leavenworth, particularly out in Plains, so about 15 minutes north. So I've got a small existing high-density load operation. Last summer went through the whole application process and got that all approved probably about 6 months before the moratorium went into place. And right now I'm running about 30 kilowatts at that location. Typically in all the newspaper articles or in discussions like this, I always see numbers thrown around of, you know, multi-megawatt facilities or, you know, on the small end in the 500-plus kilowatt range. And not often do I hear loads discussed in the sub-50 kilowatt range other than, quote-unquote, illegal mining operations that are going on at people's residences that are not approved. So I just want to, ask you guys to consider the very small operations that are existing here in town. These are not built and operated by people from out of the area. These are local residents that are running small approved locations, and a large rate increase would drastically affect our business, putting some of us out. Yeah, just wanted to ask you guys to consider that, those the micro operations, I guess, when you guys are discussing this.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Good. Go ahead. I just have a comment for Thomas. Thanks for coming. I think we all received your email.
Yes.
I read through it several times, looked at the numbers, and we are considering what to do with the very small loads.
Okay.
However, you are in a residential area.
Yeah, I guess.
Correct?
Technically, yes. I'm in a pretty rural part of Plain.
So I guess we need to clarify that. But, so we definitely received it. We've talked about it. We're considering it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You bet.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Malachi Salcedo. Our business address is 615 Suite C-1 North Wenatchee Avenue, about a block north of your offices. And in preservation of my 3 minutes, I've already published a statement, very positive, of the district's current proposed cryptocurrency rate class. I think it's wise to transfer risk to the customer and go to a market-based rate. I think it's wise to shorten up and transfer the capital costs to the customer. A couple of requests and observation. Requests would be, as a relatively large user and hoping to expand inside the county, very comfortable with capital costs, as long as I know what they are up front so I can make a wise business decision. I think for myself and other similar customers, it's really important to, one, know what my energy rate's going to be, my operating cost electricity rate, and also that it remain relatively stable. So that's very important for me when I make a long-term business decision. I can absorb a capital cost to build out infrastructure, but I need to know what my operating cost is going to be, and it needs to stay relatively stable. To that point, I would request that the commissioners seriously consider not applying new rates to existing loads for the exact same reason. Myself, we have taken a long-term position, incurred capital costs, and are operating under the current HDL rate, and we would request that you consider applying the new rate to new proposed loads. And then last, an observation. When we stood in this room and had a community event almost 3 years ago, I'm not sure if any of you would have realistically expected that the world would be talking about cryptocurrency like it is now, but here we are. And so just the reality is, and an observation you probably already understand, this won't be the last time you talk about cryptocurrency rates and loads in county. As the industry continues to grow and evolve, we'll probably be having this discussion periodically. And so back to my first point, it's really important. I know you're focusing on what's best for the most for the longest. And so I just want to encourage you, one, I think the district's doing a great job at balancing what's best for the most for the longest. And I just want to encourage you to continue to do that. Let's get good rate protection for all of our customers. And then let's also maximize opportunity for economic development, including this emerging class that is cryptocurrency and blockchain. Thank you very much.
Malachi, before you sit down, I just have a quick question. And then I'm just brainstorming here, but if, with respect to stable energy costs, if, say, you were phased in to a new rate structure over a period of time, would that give you that stability that you need?
I think a phase-in is a possibility. It need to be a multi-year process. For anyone that's established, definitely need to be a multi-year process to allow time to absorb those impacts.
Yeah. Great. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Roberto Ocampo. I live at 1244 Submission here in Wenatchee. I had a small operation at home a couple months ago, I would say back in November. I think it was like 27K or almost 30K. And I've been stopped by doing, so I might move my mining operation to another place. And I'm paying high rates to a company that has a venture capital investment. So most of the money that I'm paying, it's going somewhere else. And I'm just here to review the chances for a small mining operation like that one he has right there, being able to do something to get advantage of these crypto mining. I do have another operation of myself that is under the paper in Wenatchee, and it's doing great. So I'm able to get advantage of being hosting third-party customers that are coming with this condition. But I'm still willing to have the chance to have some sort of allowance for small mining operations or home type of thing under any numbers, under LNA specifications, under any kind of thing based on block or transformer conditions. I'll encourage you guys, given the chance to any red payers, to have the chance to get into this condition or these mining operations. I'll still push that many times. Thank you.
And you spoke with us at our last meeting, didn't you?
Yes,
yes, I remember. I recall.
Yeah. I came with numbers and how much will it generate and how much, what was the rate.
Right.
I guess if it is a local thing, if it is not money that is coming from somewhere else, which is also going somewhere else, I think it should be allowed, I guess. I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, Bryce.
Hi. Bryce Greenfield, 1939, Valley View. I just came up here to reiterate what previous folks have said, that the variable rate is really, really hard to manage from a lot of perspectives. So I would say strongly from my perspective that a variable rate for this kind of proposition is not sustainable for my business model and for others. So I would just like to reiterate that everyone else has said. One question I do have is, from your numbers this morning, you published a production rate of about 2 cents a kilowatt hour for your cost to produce, to generate that power. And is that right? Is that?
Well, there's production cost and then there's transmission and distribution cost. So
right. Right, separate.
Right.
But this is just the production cost, right, around that 2 cents?
Right around there.
Right. So one number that I would be interested in seeing, and maybe it exists, is maybe what you're forecasting as risk to the rate of debt service. And I know you maintain a large cash reserve, but one of the things that's kind of mulling around in the back of my head is I worry that a rate hike, were it to occur any time in the next 1 to 5 years, would immediately be perceived by the community as, you know, caused by us, potentially. And there are other sources of risk, one of them being debt service, one of them being cost go up, you know, labor rates, whatever they are. But I've not seen any kind of tables or any kind of discussion on where the utility views its risks are and any quantification of those risks. So it's probably because I haven't seen it. I'm sure you have it. But I would be interested in that if that's around. And then my final question, and I'll leave you all be, is I know the timeline for building a new substation is years. But I'm curious as to what timeline schedule variance is for improvement of an existing substation, adding additional capacity if there were transmission capacity to that substation. That's a number that I would be curious to know. Maybe you know it already. I don't. But that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bryce.
Hi, my name is Kurt Erlandson. I do live on the other side of the river, but I feel I'm very much a part of Chelan County. I'm also had some skin in the game. I have my own solar system and produce about 3,000 watts, so I understand some of the complexities of making electricity. And I'd just like to make some comments around the future. In the future, this world will need to be making a transition from fossil fuels to renewable energies, and this system here in Chelan County is just as good as gold to help in this transition, because these renewable energies, I can tell you, are very variable. Solar produces almost nothing in the winter and huge amounts in the summer, and so there needs to be some backup, and a source like hydropower is an ideal place to get that backup power. And the way to make that transition, of course, is to convert things that are now using fossil fuels, cars, trucks, buses, airplanes, etc., to electricity. Another thing I'd just like to remind everyone of is that this PUD, like the other PUDs, I'm part of Douglas County PUD myself, is basically there for the public interest. And this cryptocurrency industry that now wants to become a big customer of the Chelan County PUD, you know, I feel that we need to serve the public interest first, not a private for-profit company that wants to set up shop in Chelan County. And so a better investment of our surplus kilowatts, whether it's in Douglas County or Chelan County, would be in aiding the transition from fossil fuels to renewables. So one example of this is I drive an electric car, and it's darn hard to find a place to charge sometimes. There are not many of them around. And Chelan County PUD, as well as other PUDs, could actually make a profit by selling electricity to charge cars with on the highway. And at this point, there's just very few places to charge in Chelan County and almost none in Douglas County. So this is a place where you could be serving the public and also making the transition from fossil fuels to renewables. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment.
My name is Aubin Honeysett. I live at 1802 Manhattan Drive in East Wenatchee. And I just wanted to make a couple of comments. So we have, since the last public hearing, we have, there's a group of us that have gotten together and we've created a what we would like to see become a nonprofit at some point. And what we would really like to do is provide educational information for people that, you know, this is a very elusive concept. And blockchain technology is not specific to cryptocurrency as much as there are other applications that that blockchain technology can be used with, such as, you know, like virtual reality and things like that. So having these data centers may actually be a benefit in the future, even if they don't continue to operate as cryptocurrency operations. I wanted to speak to the point of sustainability. Because we are largely hydro power in this region, that's been a push for a lot of people to come to this area. Not only is it more cost effective for their operations, but it's more sustainable than sending people to other parts of the world, such as China, where they are using much more, you know, dirty energy sources and, you know, coal burning, that kind of thing. So, you know, by allowing these people to operate in this area, then it would, in fact, allow more sustainable energy use in this particular field. To speak to Steve Wright's point regarding, you know, like if there were ways that land or other kinds of bargains, I think is the word that you used, could be used by you from the miners or other users of blockchain technology, then our organization, which is called Blockchange, might actually be a in between what it is that the PUD, the other utility districts require, and the users of blockchain technology. And I did want to speak real quickly to the point as far as the variable rates. Those variable rates, I might have missed something in terms of why that was put in place, because from what I understand, blockchain technology users, the centers that are set up, are extremely consistent with their energy usage, in which case there's really not a lot of up and down variability. So perhaps I misunderstood that. I did appear just a couple of minutes late. And my last point I would like to make would be... Well, I should say, if you would allow me to, we have cards, so I would love to give you our cards so that we can make some kind of connection. And I have been making attempts to reach the PUD. Unfortunately, we've been unable to connect, so I would hope the PUD remains open to us kind of being a intermediary between the utility districts, because they do have a very reasonable need to look at the risks that may be involved, but we can also be a point person for a number of different users of blockchain technology, whether that miners or other applications. So I would hope that and anyone in the room too, I would be happy to give out our cards. Please do approach us if you would like to be involved in our organization. We can kind of bring talk more about what it is that we're trying to do. Finally, I was curious as far as, so the draft cryptocurrency rate considerations slide referred to mitigating variability through third party. And I was curious as far as what that would look like and perhaps getting more information on that so that the variability could be, we would know how a third party would affect that variable rate and how we could get a more consistent rate. So that would be something I'd be curious to learn more about. Would you allow me to give you some cards?
How about after the meeting today?
Okay.
And when we'll stay, or the commissioners will stay, and feel free to come and mingle and give us your card. We appreciate that.
Excellent. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you. Look,
could you tell us a little bit about your membership?
So let me see here. I don't want to make any mistakes. So our mission statement is we are here to align public and private interests with the educational resources to facilitate safe, ethical, innovative blockchain technologies and data sciences. So we do have a couple of goals as well, but largely this is for the betterment of the community at large. And what we would really like to see is the opportunity for people to gain more knowledge and education on how this technology functions, the benefits of it, and we're going to be very transparent as far as, you know, there are downfalls, and we are not going to try to hide any of that. However, you know, small operations, you know, like a couple of machines in somebody's home isn't going to cause, you know, extreme power surges. However, if they wanted to expand, then we would have the educational resources to make sure that there's no safety risks for the community, such as how, you know, the types of lines and how much power can be transferred through what's available.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Hi, my name is Ryan Ochoa. I'm at 1250 North Wenatchee Ave. I'd just like to piggyback on a couple of things that these guys have said so far and just give a background of myself. I have a small high-density load authorized operation. I started as a hobby last year, early last year, and moved into a, you know, an official phase, I guess. My usage is at 3% of a megawatt. And so I hear a lot of talk of megawatts, and sure, we would like to expand, but you know, maybe double of what I have now. So in essence, I'm a small miner. My background's in information technology. I've worked in the field since I could drive a car. My background's an IT consultant. And I see that where blockchain is at and the solutions that it's going to solve in the future. So, you know, a lot of the problems that we see today in terms of security and availability, data confidentiality, you know, you hear stories on the news about healthcare systems being hacked. This is the start of a solution for the problems that we're seeing in technology today. So currency, cryptocurrency, it's a good application. It's a distributed network. It makes a lot of sense. But there's uses far beyond this. And with that, things are going to change. So the protocol that we use, the proof of work, that's going to change as well. So this power usage is not always going to remain at such a high level. There's other technologies or protocols, if you will, proof of stake, distributed proof of stake, and many other proposals that are out there to try and create a new system because the community understands the energy usage as well. So with that said, I've been a striving entrepreneur, you know, my entire adult life. I've moved out here. I love it out here. Absolutely love it. I lived all over the country. I purchased my first property here, and I've been able to offer affordable housing to other community residents as well. So I have plans for expansion. I have business interests that are ready to help and join and create a team. But right now we're just kind of at a standstill, you know, in terms of where this moratorium lies. The news on the variable rate is not very encouraging. I understand, you know, sending the risk over, but being so established here within the past year and really kind of looking at my future and the future of what I'd like to build out here, I hope that the commission can come to some kind of way to encourage the abiding, you know, people that have done everything right and been patient and, you know, have small-scale operations. So thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ryan.
I missed Dennis Bowles today. I was here the last meeting. There were probably three times as many people here at the last meeting, easily. So I'm curious about that. I've heard, Jean Poyer, Kashmir, Washington. Small operators today, big operators have been at your backs. For me, energy is precious. My power was off last Thursday for 5 hours. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience to have the lights go off, not cook your dinner, not turn on the water, you know, and to experience what it's like to not have power. And for me, looking at climate change, which I believe is very real, all these people are wanting more energy, more electricity, and they are piggybacking on precious water. There's no plans in this PUD for any kind of renewable energies, which would, I think, be a much better investment than building more substations for huge energy consumers. I'm concerned that as we move into the future, we're not looking to be a resilient community. Emergencies are happening all over our world, and we're being blind to them and listening to people say, I have this little operation, and I want to be able to make this money and let me use your power. I beg you to look at the resiliency of where the future of the world is going and think about where you want to put your investment, where you want to put your energy in order to take care of your customers. So thank you. That's my concern.
Thank you, Jean. I would like to jump in and let you know, much to, I hope, your pleasure, we own 20% of a wind farm operation.
Excellent.
In the southeast corner of the state.
Great.
So we do have renewable energy.
Solar, wind, we need to go there. Thank you.
Karaoke okay time. My name is Gail McDonough. I live in Wenatchee.
Can you hold that closer?
Yes. I live in Wenatchee, and I'm basically here as a long-term Wenatchee resident, and I have all the concerns about our source of power. One of the reasons that I chose to live here was because we had clean power. And as an environmentalist for most of my life, that was a very important factor. I have found Wenatchee to be a very livable community, and that extends out into the counties of Chelan and Douglas. And part of what is attractive about this place is not you can make more money here. It's about people and our communities. And I've heard a lot and read a lot about what Bitcoin operators want and what Bitcoin is doing for them. I'm not hearing that it's doing anything much for us. This is a take, 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 not a give. And if that's the way that people choose to develop our community so that it becomes take, take, not give, then it's not sustainable. Then what is precious to us here, just those of us who lived here a long time, is going to go bye-bye. And it's very hard to find in this world. So I do hope that you'll seriously consider the needs of community and the values of community over quick money. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi. I wasn't planning on speaking up, but I just heard her, and so I decided to. I'm Becky Peters. I live at 456 Low Street. I have a small cryptocurrency mine in my garage, and it's got an HDL line. I wanted to mention my background is as a computer programmer. I'm also local. And my interest is building applications on top of the cryptocurrency mining. And just for example, I read just today that Starbucks is going to start accepting Bitcoin for coffee. And so it's becoming more and more acceptable, and more applications are going to be built on top of it. And I think that would be something that our kids should be working on. Because you could get a couple cryptocurrency miners and learn how to, like the Ethereum ones. You can also run your games on those. But those ones, you can use a programming language and learn how to program on those pretty quickly. And working on some of that could provide jobs for people right here, and not just the take, take, take that sometimes people see cryptocurrency as. So I just wanted to add that little bit to it.
Good. Thank you, Becky.
Hi, my name is Markham Hurd, 10090 Main Street in Fishaston, Washington. And I spoke at the meeting a few months ago as well. Wanted to come back up because I missed you all so much. And just address a couple things because it's interesting. As Gene mentioned, I mean, this is maybe a third, maybe a quarter of the room a while back. But it's the passionate people that are still here, right? Maybe got some smiles. What I really like is I liked hearing from Gene and from Gail. Because cryptocurrency is very controversial. Obviously, that's why we're all here. I've seen the benefits, and I've seen probably some negative on it. There's a lot of rumors out there about crypto, and I don't have to lecture you all. You know this. In general, what I've seen is cryptocurrency and blockchain technology, which is much more than crypto, is incredibly beneficial. I love the fact that Wenatchee has been targeted for this kind of economic development because it is so sustainable. I'm an environmental and sustainability consultant, so this is kind of what I do for a living. And obviously water resources are incredible for the ability to have that renewability, and I love that here. I see we've got, as I mentioned before, this amazing, unique opportunity in the Wenatchee Valley for economic growth. The people that are truly doing crypto mining beneficially, those are our neighbors. Those are the people next to us. They're our tenants. They're people that are returning to the area from California, from the Seattle side, the dark side, where I got to admit I live most of the time. And they're coming back to this area with another way to create an income and to be able to stay here and raise their families here. Yes, we're bringing people in from nowhere that want to take advantage of this. But it's our neighbors and the people that are coming back that I see as a huge advantage. People that have been doing potentially labor jobs all their life, and oh my gosh, here's a way they can create an additional income for their family right here in Wenatchee, right in the valley. And that is huge. And that, to me, that potential growth we have here and to be able to take advantage of that for the future is amazing. We have to balance that, obviously, with who's paying for it. You know, as you mentioned, power is very near and dear to our heart, and we can't just keep taking it. Gene, you made a great point on that. That what we have here is we have a certain amount of power that's renewable over and over and over again, but it's only a certain amount. We understand that. Right now, we're selling a lot of it. I understand that to different areas, but to be able to use that power locally for us, for our neighbors, I'm not a miner myself, but I'm in it. I'm passionate about it. There's a huge wave of the future here, and I think it's something that with juggling to do it right, to do it permitted, to do it by the book, to try to keep the money local, maybe not bring the big players in from out of town, out of state, out of country is great. But to keep that benefit here so they're not going to Wyoming, South Dakota, Florida, overseas, I think that's huge. I think that's something. Hopefully we can find that balance and make it work here for everybody. I also have been attending the blockchain meetings that Aubin talked about earlier. It's an amazing, diverse group, and we have heated discussions. And we would definitely encourage people. Gene, Gail, if you guys could come sometime, we would love it because we want to hear all sides of it. And we want to be able to educate everybody, and we want to be educated because we don't know it all. By all means, and we would encourage anybody that could come, attend some of those meetings. Let's make this be something we can all be a part of and find that balance, because rather than two opposing sides, let's find out where it works for all of us. Thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Great. Thank you.
When is the meeting and where? We have them right now. We're going to be Thursday evening at 7 o'clock, and we're at
Thank you.
My name is Chris Sires, and I live at 154 Sires Lane in Leavenworth. I'm a computer scientist, and I've been watching this debate with a lot of interest. If I turn the mic up again, sorry. I don't really understand why it's a big deal to run a couple of these things at home. And the reason I don't get it is because the difference in power between a couple of miners and a regular computer is so little that I don't know that you would even notice the difference. I have also made note that the existing residential regulations say that we can have a 7-horsepower motor running 24/7. That's 7 kilowatt hours, or 21 kilowatt hours by itself. A typical home setup where you're just experimenting and learning about this technology is not going to run anywhere near that level, and it's not going to be this solid load. I'm just concerned that if I go turn on experimental equipment of my own, I'm going to get in trouble, and all of a sudden my residential rate is going to go from 2.7 cents an hour to whatever this variable rate is. And that doesn't make any sense. And I can't tell my children about this stuff and show it to them and explain to them, like, the possibilities and the potentials that are here, because I can't even explore them myself. And I find that a little difficult position to be in. And I just was hoping to hear more about the possibilities that we're looking at as a county to go work on that. And this sounds awesome, this blockchain thing. I'm really glad there's somebody actually looking at this, and I hope that you guys are open to what they're doing, and I hope that we keep the communication lines open. Just in summary, I would ask that you guys would allow your residential customers to run extremely small operations and not get upset when we're using 10 kilowatt hours at a time. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak that hasn't spoken yet?
My name is Jim Raina. I live at 2498 LeMaster Avenue here in Wenatchee. Steve, you were asking about the membership of blockchain. You've seen about 7 of us speak now. I'm kind of a skeptic of our association. I'm relatively pro on blockchain. I think it has potential. I'm less enthusiastic about the mining. I think it's a pretty heavy energy footprint for the gain that it brings to the community. I've expressed that to my group. This is no surprise. But in speaking with dam managers, not our own, but elsewhere, he'll remain nameless. we learned a little bit about nighttime power sales versus daytime power sales. And, you know, I'd like to see perhaps in your rate structure some things to encourage time-shifting demand, so people who operate at nighttime only might be able to get a better rate from you. I'd like to see perhaps something that encourages, obviously you're looking at people to help with the distribution costs here, in creating new infrastructure to meet the needs of the power that the miners want and the blockchain people want. But perhaps if they participate in providing alternative energy supplies to increase capacity, perhaps you could encourage that in your rate structure in some way. Likewise, if some infrastructure could be built that would act as a battery to store daytime power and use it at nighttime, store nighttime power and use it in the daytime, something small scale, not annual based like Banks Lake, but 24-hour based, I'm sure the mining community would be more than willing to pick up costs if they would get rate structures that encourage that process. So I think there is some places where we might find that they're working together, we can come up with some things that are good for the community outside of what we're talking about now.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who hasn't spoken yet that would like an opportunity before we let? There we go.
My name is Dave Smith. I'm with Two Wolves LLC. I have a high density load status from PUD, and I think that if I can turn around and maybe talk to these people back here, this way, I guess. One of the things that I heard at the last meeting and at this meeting, people really don't understand this. What have I brought to the community by doing this? I made a promise to Malachi Salcedo that I would do it properly, and I have. I've gone through all the inspections. I'm a small business, 44 miners. We had the additional power put in to get that. We had to pay our application fee and then pay to have the additional KVA brought into the property. That was $16,009, and it just cracks me up that there was $9 on the end of that. But I ended up also having to have Salcedo Connection do all the wiring for me. We employed three people that live here in the community, too, that did all put all of our wiring in and did it properly. Went through the labor and industry inspections, passed all of those, got requested to get UL evaluated, field evaluated, went through that process. That's the only big chunk of change that didn't stay right here in this county. That went down to the county at the south end of the state because their office is down there. But that was $14,000. All total right now, we're closing on $108,000 worth of investment, and it's all stayed here except for that $14,000. And we're planning on using this to just generate a retirement income that increases a little bit for us here. And we also hope to add sustainability for ourselves by adding solar panels as we go by the off the income we make off of it. To have a high-density load status, I pay $130 a month to maintain that. And then my power bill for the 44 miners runs, my house is on a separate meter. So I think you guys didn't know that or something, but my house is on a separate meter from my business. My business is in a small auxiliary building. My house power bill never has gone above $85, and it has a multiplier. If you look at your power bill, it has a multiplier of 1. My mining operation has a multiplier of 40, and my bill has been running anywhere from my lowest one was our first month because we weren't up and running the full first month. But that was $1,467, and our regular run right now is mid-1,500s. That money comes back to the county. It stays right here. So we're not as bad. It kind of, it's a bum feeling sometimes when you walk in here and hear the people that don't want us around, because I end up feeling really badly, and I'm actually doing it the way that I promised Malachi, that's benefiting the county, the PUD, and Iberville. So that's just what I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, Dave.
One other thing real quick. I definitely would appreciate more for the existing customer, and more of a calm or not such fluctuating expense on the power bill. Keep it the same, because I mean I'm already paying a lot of money out, so I don't mind doing that, and I'm enjoying doing it. But just keep it so that for the existing customers, we don't have a big hike or jump in our power if we can avoid that. So, all right.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Anyone else who hasn't spoken yet?
Roberto Campo from Wenatchee 1244 Submission. So I've been checking that background from PUD since I just came here 5 years ago, even though my family has been living here for 20 years on the orchard or field work. And I'm the only one that just made it just a little above that condition, being always working in the fields. So you guys took a pretty good courage to do investment into fiber optics. And that was a huge deal. and it's been a huge deal, and you guys get a pretty good revenue up out of it. You guys have the chance to help in some sort of condition to be part of that group or some sort of that thing in order to keep on this technology, help not just mining but other things to keep on doing, because support this thing of technology requires a big old utility company to keep on going. So I kind of encourage you guys to keep on that adventure or investment idea to keep on going, in, other than just resisting. So not just this portion of money that comes in with the crypto part of it, but the blockchain as it is, it's going to be, it's becoming. If I just point one example, on Walmart, it's a public information that I'm just sharing. Walmart was taking days, 4 or 5 days, to find out whenever they move stuff within its own facilities, and they just lose it. It took them 4 years to find out what was going on and why something else ended in another state, right? But now that they are using blockchain technology to track their solution, it only takes a couple minutes to find out what was happening. I mean, the item arrived somewhere else, but eventually they were able to track that back very quickly without having it to just get that items running before they can sell it. So just consider that point, and I think you guys have to consider an investment and sort of some sort of either time for her to evaluate the whole thing, or allowance of sort of some sort of energy at certain specific conditions, so it will meet all those standards you want to accomplish. That's my point.
Thank you, Roberto. Any other questions, comments? One of the things that I'd like to just say is thank you for everyone for coming, but also that the reason for this hearing today, or allowing everyone to speak, is we're looking for a way to provide access to a cryptocurrency blockchain type operation without putting any risk or damage on the current owners of the PUD. And so we invite you to continue your dialogue with each of us. You email us, find us at the grocery store, share your thoughts as we progress down this path. But we're truly interested in hearing what you have to say, understanding that we are responsible for the residents of Chelan County to safeguard this precious jewel we have, which is our power. And so help us to find a path forward that makes everyone happy. Is as General Manager Steve Wright said earlier, making lemonade out of lemons. We're trying to find a way forward. So I want to thank you all for coming this evening. I know that Steve Wright would like to say a few words before we conclude our meeting.
Well, like at the last meeting, I'd like to offer a few thoughts based on the comments we heard, just to give you some more to think about, because we'll certainly be having another meeting at some point in the future and more opportunities for you to be able to provide input. So first of all, we heard a lot of comments today about the smaller users and the folks who are existing and have already been through the process. You will not find very much about that in our presentation, and that's because, candidly, our focus so far has been on the large megawatts, because the large megawatt requests create the largest financial risk for the district. So we're trying to make sure that we went after the thing that was most important to the district's customer owners from the very beginning, and that's the multiple tens of megawatt requests. Now, having said that, I would say the principles with respect to pricing likely apply to smaller users, but there are differences. So it's things that we'd have to think through in terms of exactly how it would work for a smaller user. There is also the question of how do we treat someone who came in through our system and worked through our existing processes and got themselves established. Do we treat them the same as we would somebody new who shows up tomorrow? We have not addressed that question at all so far. That's something that we know we need to address, and we plan to present to our board in the course of the next month to 6 weeks, or just what are the issues around those kinds of folks and how they would come in. With respect to differentiated pricing, in particular nighttime demand, that's a real challenge for us because our meters don't deal with that. So we don't. It would take a much more sophisticated meter than we have on our system today. We are moving towards more sophisticated meters. We hope to have them in the next couple of years, but we don't have them available today on our system, so it's it would be impossible, actually, for us to be able to make it work, particularly at the residential level. With respect to this question about variable rates, so Lindsay made the point at the end that I want to emphasize with respect to there are ways to take the current market price, which comes out as a daily price, actually it comes out an hourly price, and turn it into something that's fixed over periods of time. And the periods of time can be months to years. The challenge is with a big user, you can work with them and say, so do you want us to work with a marketer to fix that price for you in some fashion? When you've got small users, you'd have to figure out how to consolidate those small users and then figure out what it is that they want. Do they all want 3 years or 5 years of price certainty, 1 year of price certainty? What would be the term of the agreement? And then you'd have to make sure you had folks on the other side who were ready to take that deal too. So, again, this is a level of sophistication that's beyond where we're at right now. We're not closed to the concept of working through that. We think there may be ways to do it, but there are some challenges with respect to figuring out how to consolidate small users into a group so that we could actually work with the market in order to be able to purchase from the market and get them what it is that they want. A couple other things I'd just like to note. I appreciate the comments about the value of hydropower. You're not going to find a bigger proponent of hydropower than Chelan PUD out there. We do sell a lot of power in the market. Most of that power today is used for balancing purposes, primarily for variable energy resources that are operating on the system. So we have a small fraction of wind on our system. We're mostly a hydropower utility, but we are selling a lot of power to people who own a lot of wind and solar and are using it to be able to make sure that you can provide reliable service to customers, because when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, you're not producing electricity, but the load is still there. So hydropower, it is still there at all those times, and we're trying to make sure that that value is captured out there in the marketplace. There's also a comment with respect to electrification. We are looking at electrification options. We are interested in electrification and trying to figure out ways to be able to grow load in this county or even in the state as a whole. That would create more value for hydropower. We see there's potentially a coalescence of interest there in terms of more electrification and greater use of hydropower, and ultimately that would create a higher value for hydropower, so that translates into value for our customers. But candidly, there could be a trade-off between more electrification, vehicle electrification in particular, and Bitcoin mining or cryptocurrency or blockchain. So those are trade-offs that we see that are coming over the course of the next few years. Final point I'd want to make is the question came up about blockchain. So we have spent a lot of time thinking about this definition of Bitcoin and whether to include blockchain. We have included blockchain at this point primarily because we don't know how to separate Bitcoin from blockchain. Bitcoin is based on blockchain, so we don't see a way to be able to separate it. We find it very difficult to figure out how to monitor whether someone is Bitcoin mining or operating blockchain for other purposes. And we're not really that interested in being electricity cops and going around and trying to figure out, so what are you doing today with that machine? If people have ideas about how we could separate that and do it in a way that doesn't place a tremendous onus on the PUD to be a monitor of what's going on inside of your house or inside of your machine, we'd be interested in hearing about that. So we encourage public comment on that for sure. So with that, again, hopefully those are some thoughts for you to consider, and we remain open to public comment. If there are thoughts you have about ways that we can make some of these things work better, we're very interested in hearing them, because we're looking for how can we create something that protects our existing customers but creates that economic development value for the county.
Thank you.
So, Commissioners, I've asked Lindsay to put on the screen the one proposed action staff would ask for today. We have a need, given today's public hearing status, to continue the moratorium until there's a sufficient resolution of the moratorium to the board's satisfaction. And with a friendly amendment to this, I'm suggesting that we would also continue today's hearing until the August 20 commission meeting so that we could have further conversation from the board, questions, direction, or otherwise. I've actually made that probably hard to read handwritten change on a few of your emotions. So if one of you are so inclined, we do need to continue things so that we can take the next step at the next board meeting.
Yes.
Yeah, I would move based on what Eric has just indicated, I would move to continue the moratorium adopted on March 19, 2018, and today's hearing to hold further commission discussion at our August 20, 2018 board meeting at 1 p.m.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Place to be determined. It would normally be at our boardroom, but...
So regular board meeting unless changed.
Unless it's otherwise stipulated.
Do I hear a second? Okay. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. And the ayes have it.
Thank you, Commissioners.
You're welcome. Well, thank you all for coming today. We appreciate it. Yes?
Commissioner, we do have need for a short executive session.
Oh.
If you want to recess for a time in order to take comment and mingle, we could all stick around
those
few.
Let's recess for 10 minutes, and then we will go back into executive session.
Okay, we're going to go into executive session with legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by RCW 4230.110.
For how long?
For
30 minutes. We're coming out of executive session. There have been no decisions made, and...
Any further matters?
Thank you. Hearing none, we have adjourned.